Today is July 19, and this is the Land Use and Sustainability Committee meeting. I'm joined by my colleagues, Commissioner Laura Dominguez and Commissioner David Richardson. This, I think, is our last Land Use Committee meeting of the summer before we go on recess, so we'll try to get through the entire agenda today. Housekeeping items, we don't have any deferrals or withdrawal items, so we'll try to get through the entire agenda. I don't have any requests for taking things out of order, but I see folks in the audience, and I'll just try to be mindful to get you all going on your way. What item are you here for, Nisa?
Ocean Terrace and then the FAR.
So that's number one, what? We'll start with number one. What's the other item?
Yeah, actually, I do have one that we can pick up.
Yeah, we'll take care of our colleagues here. Okay. Well, let me call up item number one. Get everybody on their way. So this is the Ocean Terrace Overlay LDR Amendment. It's Commissioner Fernandez's item. Will somebody want to tee this up?
Sure. I can go ahead and explain this. This item was referred, as the committee may remember, last November, and it was based upon a recommendation of the Planning Board, and the Planning Board had recommended that there be some changes to the regulations associated with the Ocean Terrace area. And specifically, the Planning Board had three recommendations. One was that the neighborhood impact establishment threshold for the Ocean Terrace area be reduced from the current threshold of a 200-person occupancy with entertainment or a 300-person occupancy with no entertainment to mirror that which is used in Sunset Harbor, which is over 100 seats or an occupancy in excess of 125 persons. The second recommendation was to add hostels to the list of prohibited uses, and the third recommendation was to prohibit outdoor entertainment. As the committee may recall, when you discussed this in February, you had recommended that the prohibition on hostels move forward. That prohibition was approved at first reading on June 28th and is set for second reading on July 26th, but you continued action on the other two recommendations. In the administration memorandum with regard to the other two recommendations, we've suggested that rather than lowering the occupancy load for NIE purposes to 125 persons across the board, that the lower occupancy threshold be limited to those establishments that have indoor entertainment. Outdoor entertainment would still require conditional use approval regardless of its occupancy, but rather than making it an across-the-board lowering to 125 persons, we suggested that the lowering of the occupancy to 125 persons be limited to those establishments that had indoor entertainment. With regard to outdoor entertainment, rather than prohibiting it outright, we suggested that outdoor entertainment would only be permitted as part of a restaurant establishment that serves food at all times and not as part of a standalone bar or lounge, and that the hours be limited to no later than midnight on the weekends and no later than 10 p.m. on the weekdays, and that the outdoor entertainment, if approved by the Planning Board, would be limited to ambient music that could not be audible from outside the confines of the property. These hours limitations and other limitations, if they're codified, could not be varied by the Planning Board. So outdoor entertainment would still be required to obtain conditional use approval from the Planning Board, but these express conditions could not be modified if they're codified. with that, we would recommend that the Land Use Committee discuss this and provide a recommendation to the Planning Board. This was, a dual referral. So once we have a recommendation from the Planning Board, we can bring from the Land Use Committee, we can bring that to the Planning Board.
Okay, colleagues.
Tom, this started where there were some other items, right? And then we bifurcated this and pulled it out. We sent the other stuff is already back to the commission, right?
Yeah. The only other item was the prohibition on hostels, and that's before the commission now.
Yeah. Okay. So did we put it in three different pieces? Because I know we have another one about vape and T-shirts and things like that.
Yeah. The other item regarding the comprehensive use ordinance for North Beach, that was a separate item altogether. That's also pending at the commission for second reading.
And the hostile one is going to be back for second reading?
Correct.
Right. Okay. I'd be curious to see what Mr. Kasdan, I don't know who you're representing, but hi.
Good morning, commissioners, everybody else in the city. Neeson Kasdan of Ackerman, LLP, representing Ocean Terrace Holdings. And I am here just to clarify something for the record. I'm not speaking either for or against the proposed amendments, but I do want to make sure that it is understood that Ocean Terrace Holdings has a development agreement with the City of Miami Beach, which keeps in place whatever the relevant land use and zoning regulations were in 2019. So these do not affect or impact us, and that's specifically referenced in the development agreement, and it is also as set forth in Chapter 163 of the Florida statutes for development agreements. So I just wanted to make that, and as you know, the reason for that is they have a substantial investment. They have already put $15 million up towards the public improvements, which they are going to be responsible for implementing. They have a large investment in the area, an area that has, you know, just now beginning to emerge, so it's a very risky investment. So they have a very large commitment, and in exchange for that commitment, they have a development agreement with the city, which protects their rights as of 2019. That's the only thing I wanted to put on the record. Perhaps your city attorney could acknowledge that.
Sure, yes, and good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. We've looked at the development agreement, and we agree that this ordinance would not apply to the developer.
So I'm glad you're here, because I keep getting questions about when this project is going to move forward, and we're going to see, you know, bulldozers and things like that in a park. So do you have any update on that?
What I can tell you is they are actively working on something that I think will lead us forward to development in the near future. I can't be more specific than that, but I think that there's a progress will be seen hopefully quite soon in terms of moving the development forward.
And does the development agreement have a date for the shovel in the ground?
Yes, it does.
So if you don't meet that date, then your development agreement falls apart?
No, well, there are provisions for extending it. There are also provisions for remedying it, but ultimately the developer has to move forward with the development, or there would be to comply with the development agreement. So yes.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that while you enjoy this benefit today, if you don't meet the deadline and you had to come back, you might lose the benefit if you have to redo your development agreement.
If the development agreement is terminated for any reason, then yes, all bets would be off, so to speak.
Yeah, but the staff is in agreement now that this would not affect that. So, Tom, how would this affect, like, what area would this cover?
But we're only one block, remember, of Ocean Terrace.
Yeah, that's
the
right.
Overlay covers the entirety of Ocean Terrace.
That's what I'm curious about. So this would cover?
This would cover the area approximately from 73rd Street to 75th Street. So
on both sides of on Ocean Terrace and on Collins, right?
Correct.
And your development agreement is on both sides or just on
no,
Ocean
covers,
Terrace?
No, the property we own is virtually the entirety
yeah.
of 74th to 75th from Collins to Ocean Terrace, to the center line of Ocean
Except
Terrace.
For that one building, I think, right?
There's Except one. For the one building on the corner where the yeah. hamburgers are.
And right. so your development agreement covers that one block, and this overlay is?
In all of Ocean Terrace, which starts, as you know, at 73rd yeah. Street and goes to 7th. So there's basically an entire block south of us, which is also
so basically
covered.
This would only affect one block on both Ocean Terrace and on Collins.
Assuming that they move forward with their proposal, yes.
Thank you.
So thanks for, you know, highlighting these issues. So I said this before, I think we're going to end up passing the hostile thing, exclusion, prohibition. But, you know, again, I don't know. This feels like a solution looking for a problem. I don't know that there's, you know, large public clamor to do this. The area is, you know, about to be developed. My preference would be let's wait and see what happens. As Mr. Kazin said, the development agreement would even trump this overlay. So then you're talking about one block, and if I'm not mistaken, that block already has, for example, which would be excluded, the band shell, right? So we already have an example of an outdoor concert venue that doesn't bother anybody. It's cherished by most folks in our city. And even though that would be excluded by this overlay, it's just an example that you can have outdoor entertainment that is compatible with the neighborhood, very compatible. And in fact, one of my colleagues, who's not here today, even asked that they exclude a restaurant establishment up there, if I'm not mistaken, that has live entertainment. So, like, we're already running into examples where we don't need this. You know, and I'm just mindful, like, in south of 5th, which, you know, before all of the redevelopment of the last 20-plus years, you know, you've got wonderful establishments that are cherished by the neighborhood, like Monty's, a 700-plus venue of outdoor entertainment. You've got Nikki Beach, outdoor entertainment. You've got Giorgio's, which is attached to a hotel, outdoor entertainment. And people love these things. They'll fight fiercely if you try to close them down or change them in any way. So, again, I'm not leaning into doing this because I don't know that there's a problem that we need to solve yet.
Alex is not, I mean, Commissioner Fernandez is not coming in to talk about it. Does anybody know?
Yeah, we've deferred this a number of times because he hasn't been here. I thought it would be appropriate to hear it. I've expressed this concern. I know Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez has expressed a concern, so I don't know that he's going to have the support. We can keep this on here and let him come in and address what he's trying to do here. But I think we've outlined this would be – I don't know that this is tremendously useful. I think we did address the hostel situation and prohibit that, but I don't know that there's going to be an appetite to extend that.
I did get a text from Commissioner Fernandez's aide. She said he's on his way.
Okay, great.
And, Mr. Chairman, in the meantime, there's one caller on Zoom if you'd like to take.
Okay, sure.
James Recio.
Good morning, James.
Good morning.
Hi, James. You have 2 minutes.
Okay. I'm the owner of a Sushi Beachy restaurant on the corner of 74th and Ocean Terrace. We've been open now for about 5 weeks. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, we're listening.
Okay, great. So I rented this property over 4 years ago. And through tremendous personal sacrifice, I've been able to open this restaurant and investments and local investors. And then now the restaurant's been open for 5-6 weeks. Everybody loves us. We have lots of repeat customers from the Akoya, from the Carillon, from Biscayne Point Island. We have all 5-star reviews across all platforms. When I rented this property 4 years ago, I didn't know that somebody would disallow the ability to have entertainment or that they would reduce the threshold to 100 seats. So this really affects me. Everything that we do here is done in the most tasteful manner. Everything is of the highest quality. And I would like to be I would like to be excluded from whatever happens here in terms of reducing the neighborhood impact establishment to 100 seats or to disallow entertainment. If I would like to have a bossa nova band here on a Saturday during the day, I should be allowed to do that. I've greatly improved the corner and the street, and I would like you to take that into consideration.
Thank you. So are you saying that live entertainment is helpful to your business and your patrons like it and it's not causing any issues?
Well, I don't have any live entertainment now, but I might in the future want to have live entertainment.
Okay. And your venue is how big?
My venue is 900 square feet on the inside, which only has kitchen and bathrooms. And then the rest of the venue is outdoors. It's on the corner of 74th and Ocean Terrace. You can look us up on Google. You'll see dozens and dozens and dozens of pictures. We've been open for about 5 weeks. And I can say that we've kind of transformed this corner here. Everybody loves us. We have tremendous reviews. We have a tremendous following of local people, mostly middle to high income customers. We have a high guest average of $57 per person. We haven't had any complaints of any type from the building or from anybody. We're supported by the Saint-Tropez building and by all of our neighbors. And like I said, I've been able to put this together through tremendous adversity and sacrifice. And this would potentially really impact me and our business and our investors and the community.
Okay, thank you. Is there anybody else on?
I have no other callers.
Good morning, Fernandez. Come on up. Before you speak, let me just catch up my colleague. Good morning, Commissioner Fernandez. Were you able to listen in? You want me to catch you up? Okay, we're talking about your item number one. We're going over the language of the overlay amendment, and we're trying to figure out whether or not there's an appetite to fully adopt it or narrow it or reject it altogether.
Sure.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Ronnie Mualem. I'm the owner of Ronnie's by the Ocean, 73rd Street and Ocean Terrace.
So you're the guy I was talking about.
And basically what James was saying, I'm in the same situation. I'm there 8 years. I was struggling the first 3 years to build a business, to bring people to the area. I do have live entertainment, and people love it. And
I'm not quite familiar with your restaurant, but I'm very familiar with your block there. Mm-hmm. You've been there a long time. Tell us about sort of the history and the challenges of your particular corner there.
Well, as you know,
I've seen it over the years.
Yeah.
You know, be vacant or, you know, somewhat derelict, and you know, I think you and others have helped bring a vibrancy to the area.
That's exactly what I'm, you know, I'm
making
saying.
It safer.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. I've been dealing a lot with homelessness, with a lot of things that I personally, as a person who has a lot of experience knowing how to talk to these people and clean out the area in a very well manner. And it's working. Everything has been working. I work with the two officers that are working in the corner there all the time. And we have great relation, and we take care of the neighborhood. We take care of everything that we can do. And the entertainment that we create, people love it. All the local people, they come in and they enjoy and they have a good time. And we don't want to ruin that atmosphere.
Yeah, look, I think it's personally, I think it's a perfect example of, what a business can do for a neighborhood, not just in terms of, you know, a place to eat and enjoy the company of your friends and neighbors, but in terms of just public safety, right?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
You know,
activating it, by bringing people, you make it safer. Because, you know, nothing attracts crime and blight and homelessness like vacancies.
This is the key. The key is all about the landlords, about the people who own the establishments. It's what you do and what kind of crowd you're going to bring into the place. Look what happened to Ocean Drive. We don't want that. We don't want this to happen. So, you know, we do the right things. We have the right music, the right entertainment, the right food, everything that's complies with the neighborhood, that people love it, and we get a lot of tourists as well, and we have no issues, no problems. We eliminate problems.
Yeah,
and that's what we're there for, you know.
Yeah,
and we're not too many people on the block, really.
Yeah, and I know Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez, who's typically against live entertainment and these kinds of things, has specifically mentioned you and wanting to make sure that you weren't harmed by this. And you know, my feeling on that is, you know, I'm very flexible and open-minded when it comes to good business ideas that do things that are good for the neighborhood and compatible with neighborhoods, and I don't like blanket prohibitions on things, you know, except in really extreme examples where there's very little benefit. But live entertainment that can coexist with the neighborhood and that helps a business survive, I'm very open to it. So, Commissioner Fernandez, do you want to talk about where you're coming from with this item?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And certainly there are a number of good establishments there. I think we're always tasked with a responsibility to legislate in the present, but always thinking about the future. Thinking about the future, what could happen that we're not thinking about in the moment. I think our professional staff has come forward with some recommendations that I personally feel that make sense. For example, allowing it as part of a restaurant establishment. It creates a protection that you're not going to have standalone bars or lounges that could now, come in with this type of use. As has been well stated on the record today, there are establishments that have been there that have contributed to the area and that can be part of the success in the future of that area. Setting a time of no later than midnight, and I think that is reasonable as well. Reasonable recommendation that was brought forward by our professional staff, as well as their suggestion that any noise coming from any recorded devices or television or anything like that be kept to an ambient level. I think that's a good policy recommendation from our professional planning staff, as well as not allowing any of these regulations to be weakened through a conditional use process or by the planning board. Mr. Planning Director, I don't know if that summarizes well the professional recommendations you've drafted for us, but I feel it sets a good middle ground that sets some protections for the future, while at the same time preserving some of these institutions that are contributing to the economy of the area. Tom, I don't know.
You summarized that correctly, Commissioner, and I had gone over those recommendations in a little bit more detail when the item was introduced just before you got here. But, yeah, that accurately summarizes that.
Does this contemplate any changes as it relates to occupancy? Does it impact that at all? Because I know at the beginning there was the idea contemplated doing a reduction in occupancy.
Lower occupancy. What it would do potentially is create a lower threshold for requiring an NIE, and that would only apply to indoor establishments that have entertainment. Right now, if you're an indoor establishment that has entertainment, you're not required to get a CUP unless your occupancy exceeds 200 persons. The suggestion here was, rather than lowering it to 125 persons for any establishment, it would only be 125 persons if that establishment has indoor entertainment.
Okay. And is that consistent to any other area in our city?
It would be consistent with the regulations that exist in Sunset Harbor.
Which, Mr. Chair, I think you sponsored those a number of years ago. I feel comfortable with the recommendation that our professional staff has put forward. I think it's a good safeguard, especially as we want to see investment, but quality investments in that area, investments that uplift that area. I think this sets a good balanced approach to it. A responsible approach to it.
Well, one thing, Commissioner Fernandez, I don't know if you heard, Mr. Kasdan, who represents the owners of Ocean Terrace Holdings. I'm not sure the name of the entity, but the group that owns the block from 74th to 75th, they have a development agreement with the city. That part of that development agreement provides that they're bound by regulations in place as of the date of that agreement, which was 2019, so therefore this wouldn't apply to them so long as they're operating under the development agreement. So I think this would only, Tom, the area that would be affected in the overlay would be, what,
73rd to 74th Street.
Yeah, so this is a one-block regulation, and it would affect Ronnie's property.
I don't see it appropriate because I've been there 8 years and I'm under the same situation. I've been doing music. I've been operating the same way. Why do I have to get hurt myself?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same street.
I agree.
It doesn't make sense.
I agree.
They have the band shell. when they finish the entertainment, most of the people that come, they sit down, they have drinks by my establishment, and, you know, they're enjoying the night.
Yep.
Go ahead. Yeah, I agree with you. You've been there 8 years. Why would we give a developer who hasn't been there, we're waiting for them to make progress, something more than what we would give you? It hardly seems fair. Right. And then you've only got, I think, your business and then the other one, the sushi place that the gentleman just called in. I think those may be the only two establishments in that block, right? On Ocean Terrace?
And Ocean Terrace, yeah.
Yeah, so block, yeah. Now if we exempt you, now we're only talking about one block on Collins.
And Collins is a commercial street.
Yeah, I'm not seeing a need for this right now. But I want to ask Commissioner Fernandez, and Tom, maybe you can ask me, because Commissioner Fernandez, when he was describing, said restaurants, but I'm reading it, and I'm probably missing it somewhere. Because number two on the staff analysis is taken out of this, because that's already dealt with in another item, right? The hostel one?
Yeah, the first part of the analysis is what was recommended by the planning board. The planning board made three recommendations.
So item one, item two, we've already adopted as part of another one. We're going to hear that on second reading. And then number three, but I don't see those one and three tied to restaurant or food being served, unless
what,
I'm missing.
What we did was down further on page, it would be page four, but the second page of this memo, Commissioner.
Okay.
We put together some alternative recommendations. One paragraph talks about lowering the threshold of establishments only with indoor entertainment to an occupancy of 125 or more persons. And then as it pertains to outdoor and open-air entertainment, what we suggested that was that this would be permitted within establishments that were restaurants serving food at all times, and that the hours be limited to midnight on the weekends, 10 p.m. on the weekdays, and that it be limited to ambient level music. So we weren't recommending a total prohibition, but some limitations on outdoor entertainment.
Commissioner Fernandez, let me offer something. Maybe this can get us somewhere. Yeah, I would be open to, you know, leaning your way if what you're saying is so no bars on Ocean Terrace, standalone bars, right? Just it has to be, you know, restaurant primary use. If they serve alcohol, obviously fine, and they want to have live entertainment, fine. If we're worried about is having, you know, a bar that's going to have live entertainment, I would support that on Ocean Terrace. I don't know that we need to do it on Collins because that's such a busy corridor and nobody lives on it. I don't know that prohibition would be needed. But, you know, I want to be flexible to provide restaurants, not put a lot of red tape in their way, because, you know, the one gentleman who called in has 900 square feet. That's tiny. You know, to make them go and get, you know, special permits, conditional use permits, or even, you know, strike down, impose prohibitions on their ability to have live entertainment to bring patrons, I think that's onerous. And I think you're going to end up killing that whole block, because that block has been, you know, dormant and vacant and underutilized for a really long time, and only recently has started to have some vibrancy to it. And as development comes to that area, I don't want to see that area struggle any longer than it already has. So I want to maintain that flexibility to try to attract good businesses that are compatible with the neighborhood. And if we make a mistake, we can remedy it then. Yeah. But I think we're providing a solution to a problem that doesn't yet exist.
Mr. Chair, thank you. What I'm going to do is, for the time being, I'm going to defer this item for the time being. You know, I do have concern that the Ocean Terrace project really hasn't moved much in quite some time, and, you know, what's going to be the future of that project, you know. But Mr. Attorney, I believe you stated that this doesn't apply this wouldn't apply to Ocean Terrace because their development agreement overrules and that governs over this. And so I don't want to create something, as was stated earlier, that just really applies to a very small area of this overlay. That truly wouldn't be fair. You know, that you have this overlay that's larger in area, and this policy was intended to cover that entire overlay, but because of that development agreement that governs over this, that this really now won't really cover that entire overlay, just a very small portion of it. So for the time being, I'm going to defer this, but I do have concerns about, you know, as we develop the economy in this area and people start to get creative and they start to bring in businesses in there that could then be detrimental to the very same work that Ocean Terrace is trying to do over there, create a vibrant community there where people can live. Mr. Chair, I don't want to take more time of the committee on this item that I'm going to defer. I appreciate the committee's input and feedback on this.
Do you want this continued to the September meeting?
I'd like to defer to no time certain for at the moment.
Let me, okay. Can I react to that? Before you arrived, I was asking Mr. Kasdan about the status of the project because there hasn't really been
nothing.
And to the extent that there's no activity, then the development agreement falls apart.
That's
in
right.
In which case, they would no longer enjoy the benefit.
That's right? Correct.
So I would like you to use a different word. Instead of defer, I would say, would you consider withdrawing it? I'll tell you why. As long as it's deferred, these gentlemen every month have to be vigilant and worried that it's going to come back. And you could always bring it back in 2 or 3 months by just another referral if you wanted to. But I think it would give people some comfort if you withdraw it, because they don't have to keep watching it every month to see if it's going to come up and they're going to have a little bit of surprise. And I would say that if that development agreement does not move forward, then that would be a good time to come back and say, let's look at all four of the blocks right now. But I think right now we want to protect the two businesses that are there, so it's only going to affect Collins in one block.
Through the chair, it's just a procedural matter. I mean, I don't mind reintroducing the item in the future. I don't mind withdrawing this. I mean, the thing is, has this through the chair, Mr. Attorney, has this been to the planning board already?
No, we've not. We were waiting for the land use committee to make a recommendation, and it has not been.
Has not been there yet. So in that case, it's just purely a procedural matter, and I don't mind reintroducing in the future. I will reintroduce the item in the future if this development agreement does fall apart, because we cannot continue to have that area sit there the way that it is. And I hope the representatives are listening to me, because it's just embarrassing the way the conditions in which that area is being subjected to. It's a beautiful part of Miami Beach. It needs the support of the development that was agreed to there. The public deserves what they were promised there, and it's just been sitting there dilapidating over time. And I'll bring it back in the future if this does not move forward. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw the item. Thank you.
Well, Thank you for bringing it up. And I just want to acknowledge your work on, you know, areas of North Beach, particularly to, you know, think ahead and, you know, prohibit nuisance retail uses, obviously. I think before you walked in, we talked about this originally got bifurcated because you had picked up on the idea of prohibiting hostels in this overlay. That right now is sitting before the commission for second reading, so that should pass. So, you know, you've made a contribution already to this area, and we'll keep our eye on things as hopefully things evolve.
And also the vape shops and the T-shirts and all that other stuff.
Retail.
Thank you.
I just want to say I haven't. We have. It's us as the Land Use Committee and the collective of the City Commission. Not one commissioner does. It's always teamwork. It's all of us together. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Okay. Okay. All right. So I am going to call up. We have two items. I think it's only two items affecting Sunset Harbor. Well, let's do one I think might be easier first, number six. I don't know who wants to introduce this. This is my colleague, Commissioner Dominguez's item. This is to amend the CD2 zone district, which is in Sunset Harbor, part of our resiliency code to revise the conditional use permit requirements for restaurants in the Sunset Harbor neighborhood and amend the off-street parking requirements for restaurants in parking district number 5. Commissioner Dominguez, would you like to say a few words?
Sure. I had a meeting with Sunset Harbor Neighborhood Association and also with the people doing the project, Deco Capital, and their attorneys, and it was to discuss increasing the occupancy for a restaurant that they're planning for the first floor, and in order to increase the occupancy, we would need to amend the CD2 zoning. And in speaking with the city administration, they drafted something narrowly so that it wouldn't have unintended consequences in the rest of the neighborhood, and I think all parties were happy about it.
Okay. Tom, do you want to add anything to that?
No, the only thing, I think Commissioner Dominguez summarized it well. The only thing I would just clarify is that the crux of the ordinance does two things. One, it allows for a limited increase in the maximum occupancy of a restaurant serving alcohol from the current 199 to up to 299. And then it modifies the parking requirement for restaurants that are over 3,500 square feet from the current 1 parking space for every 4 seats to 1 space for every 8 seats. The rationale being that because these restaurants are in close proximity to the Sunset Harbor parking garage and there's available capacity, that they would be able to accommodate that.
Yeah, Tom, is this change, would this be applicable to all of Sunset Harbor or just this one location?
This would be applicable as drafted to all of Sunset Harbor.
Yeah. So I have some concerns about it. I'll tell you why. We have a rule about parking, and if we don't make this change, the developer is going to have to give us $1 million. And it does seem like spot zoning to me, because I think, Tom, when you met with me, I calculated that they, since they don't have the parking, they would have to pay for 25 spaces at $40,000. So it's really a gift to this one developer of $1 million. And it's a little concerning. I mean, we have another one of our colleagues that constantly complains about the project at 72nd Street that we're building garages for developers. And we have a Sunset Harbor garage that really fits into the same category. So I just want to be, fair. So would this change be changed for the entire city, or just is this rule only currently applicable to Sunset Harbor?
These proposed revisions are only applicable to Sunset Harbor. Sunset Harbor is in parking district number 5, and parking district number 5 only applies to Sunset Harbor. And the regulations regarding the occupancy load for restaurants are specific to the Sunset Harbor neighborhood.
So do we have those rules applicable to other neighborhoods? Is it 1 to 4 or 1 to 8?
All the other neighborhoods would be 1 to 4 where they have a parking requirement.
So we're saying everywhere else in the city, if you don't have the parking, you have to pay the $25,000, but this is a carve-out for one neighborhood.
In this particular instance, with a modification to the parking requirement, restaurants similar to the one being proposed wouldn't have to pay the fee as part of the new construction.
So, see, what do we do next week when somebody comes from a different neighborhood and says, you just gave $1 million to one developer in Sunset Harbor, I want the same deal? I mean, it's a slippery slope, right? There's a reason that we have the impact fee. Is there any public benefit being offered here?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
All right, come on up.
Good morning, commissioners. If I may address the parking question, my name is Tracy Slavens, address at 3800 Northeast 1st Avenue. You know, the unique feature of Sunset Harbor is that it has a public parking garage. And as part of the analysis for the request being made with this ordinance was whether there is adequate parking for all of the uses in Sunset Harbor. and an audit of the parking capacity of the garage on peak hours, peak times, peak days, yielded that at its peak times, there are still 165 empty parking spaces in the city garage. One of the suggestions that was made in the discussions revolving around the draft of this ordinance was whether the parking requirement for restaurants should be eliminated completely. And it kind of went back and forth on that, and although that's an extremely favorable suggestion, some parking should be provided for these uses within the buildings if this is new construction. In this case, the particular building for the owner that I represent has 78 parking spaces in its building. Those parking spaces are meant to accommodate a mix of uses, all of which have different peak hours and peak times, peak days. So, where a restaurant will have nights and weekends with parking demands, an office use does not. So the parking provided in the new construction building satisfies the demands of all the uses within the building. Yes, there is a fee for not providing required parking that the city would not have, but by not providing excess parking, we're not creating a condition in a building that doesn't get used. And also, it pushes the revenue to the city in a different way through the payment of parking in the public facility.
But not to the tune of $1 million.
Well, over time.
So one of my colleagues.
Over time, perhaps.
One of my colleagues opposes the 72nd Street project that I vehemently support with the argument that we're building a parking garage there so developers don't have to provide parking. And you're making the same argument, right, that we have parking there so the developer doesn't have to provide the parking. And basically, otherwise, it's $1 million. And listen, I actually support this.
Yeah.
But what do I do next week when the developer comes, a different developer from a different neighborhood, and says, I don't want to pay the impact fee because you just gave a carve-out to one developer in one neighborhood? So I want to find a way to be fair to everybody. Maybe we eliminate the rule citywide. And I don't know if Sunset Harbor is supporting this because you guys never support anything from a developer. So I don't know why you're supporting this.
If I may, as a resident also of Sunset Harbor, I, watch what happens in the neighborhood on a daily basis at all hours of the day, all days of the week. I'm a full-time resident. And what I see is that most people don't drive, right? So they don't need parking. So I think there's maybe a citywide discussion about what the parking regulations are in an urbanized environment where people do walk and use rideshare and ride their bicycles. Unless I'm going off Miami Beach, I don't drive. My husband and I are down to one car. It's a different existence than in the suburbs. And so the demand for parking is different here. And whether it's appropriate to tax developers, business owners, et cetera, for providing parking that would otherwise be required in a suburban environment that's not necessary here is a policy decision. From a demand perspective, it has been confirmed that there's not a demand for essentially having double parking for all of your uses, not sharing the parking between your uses. And a restaurant typically has less of a parking demand because people do use rideshare, and in Miami Beach they often walk.
And I totally agree in the situation with Sunset Harbor. I'm just trying to find the explanation when I get a call from somebody else next week in a different neighborhood that's perhaps going to have to write a check to the city for $1 million. And I would wonder, Sunset Harbor, will you support the 72nd Street parking garage?
Yeah. So let me take a little of the focus off of you, and I want to call my friends up in support of this, and I'm supportive of this item, but I want to acknowledge what you're saying and what you're doing. You're right, and I invite you to, if you want to stand your ground on this, stand your ground. But you've made a very good point. As a policy matter, why would we do this? Except this versus other areas, and you raise a really good one, which is 72nd Street, North Beach, which we just heard, is an area that's been totally ignored by our city for decades and decades, and it hasn't been until the last, 10 or a dozen years where we started to actually try to do something there, and hopefully, we're starting to see projects come online there, one of which is a catalytic event, which is the 72nd Street Aquatic Center, parking garage, et cetera, which was the largest of the publicly funded items in the geobond, overwhelmingly supported by the voters. And then we have, one or two colleagues actively trying to kill it, which would literally just wreck any future renaissance that North Beach will have. And they're doing it on a policy matter that you just articulated. So the hypocrisy and the, the irony is not lost on me. This example that we have before us today is an example why our policy needs to be flexible, needs to be mindful of the realities of the world. I live in Sunset Harbor. We have ample parking. It's an amazing neighborhood for lots and lots of reasons, but just the way the whole ecosystem works, right? It's active during the day, it's active at night, and it's very often a different a group of users. In the morning, you have a lot of people going to the gyms, and they park, and at night, you have a lot of residents just walk or carpool or rideshare to the restaurants. And we have ample parking to suit, and I think the reason our parking garages do so well is because they're active 24/7, but they're rarely ever at capacity. We always have plenty of surface parking and plenty of parking in our garage. So to just keep building more parking for parking's sake, because we have this rule, and not have flexibility to amend it, that's just bureaucracy. And I don't want to let bureaucracy stand in the way of good ideas, good development, things that are good for the neighborhood. So I love that you made your point. Stand your ground, keep making it. I will argue the exact same point you make when the 72nd Street item comes up. And we really do need your support for those kinds of things. You don't live in the neighborhood, but, please come up. And it's important that folks like you, my friends, speak up even when it's not in your neighborhood, because a lot of times we're left to take the beating.
You know how hard we work.
Please introduce yourself.
I'm sorry, Marilyn Freundlich, Sunset Harbor. How hard we work to get that garage built. Tom is my witness. Well, I think it was even before you were, the planning director that we started on that. And that is what brought life to Sunset Harbor. I mean, without that parking garage, Sunset Harbor would be two towing companies, kind of thing. So we support this particular project, this part of the project, because they really don't need that extra parking, okay? And the 72nd Street is the same thing. But there's one big, big difference, in my opinion. The city should require parking for residential. That is imperative because, first of all, we don't want to be paying, and we have the situation in our building. We don't want our residents to have to be paying a parking fee when you live in a multi-million-dollar apartment. I mean, it's ridiculous that you build these kinds of apartments and you don't have parking. So when it comes to residential, please, please, please enforce that they have to have X amount of parking because residents shouldn't be having to look for a parking place and paying for a parking place. But when it comes to commercial, that's a totally different story. We have to share that parking. If the restaurant needs it at night and the businesses need it during the day, why build double parking? It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And so, then they're not allowed to valet in the garage either, which is something that, where are they going to put the cars? And most people have valet in front of the restaurants. Yeah. We do support this. We have had many discussions about this. We had a board meeting. There are some items that I wanted to bring up. And the fact of the $299 maximum that I know you put down to guard it, I want to make sure that includes inside and outside. So this way it doesn't go above that amount. And the 199 seats, we felt that that was really good because that makes up space between tables, that you don't have tables next to each other and start screaming at each other and be able to hear each other. And that's something that the developer wanted for this type of restaurant, and hopefully others will do the same, that they don't crowd the whole dining, that you're screaming on top of each other. So this one was very important to us. We support it. It's not something they brought it up to us. We have some issues about this parking. Hey, listen, it's between 8 and 4. Go to the middle. If you want to reduce it, go to 6. And this way you're in the middle and the city will get some money. This way, reduce it to 6.
You know what? I'm supporting the item and I'm going to move the item, but I made my point.
Yeah.
And we will at least I personally will support the 72nd Street
thank
project.
Thank you.
But look, the 72nd Street project, for example, I mean, the voters overwhelmingly supported the project. It's coming in over budget. What else is new? But we have the funding for it. That project is taking an existing surface parking lot, so it's already a parking lot. We're adding parking covered. And so the beach people use it during the day, and at night, all those businesses around there can use it. It's a no-brainer,
you know,
but they're literally trying to kill it, Marilyn.
I am in love with North Beach. I absolutely love North Beach and what, you know, can be done. That, I always tell my husband, that's the next frontier. And if you want to, I mean, we're too old for that, but if it weren't for that, I would just put my foot over there already. Yeah. Because it is the next frontier, and there's so much that can be done in North Beach.
Tom, so you can, we can actually add in the ordinance that it would include indoor and outdoor, so this way...
That's already in the definition.
Okay, I just want to
When you talk about occupancy includes all portions of a private property, regardless of whether it's indoors or outdoors.
Indoors. And I don't know if the 199 seats includes indoors and outdoors, but just want to make sure it doesn't...
That's specific to indoors.
Indoors. And then outdoors, they can have more?
Available...
But they will not go beyond 299 then?
They couldn't have more than 299 persons. And so with the 299-person limit, if they even had room for more seats outside, potentially.
Yeah. And the valet is the only thing we have a problem is that, you know, in 18 Sunset is a one lane in front of the building. I know they're going to buy the spaces for the parking. And we're worried about the valet, like, either backing up on that street and instead of trying to bring valet through the back to Bay Road because it's less use. Instead of right there, you have the loft right there, then you have Sunset, and you have the restaurant.
Sarah, Commissioner Dominguez wanted to say something. Let me just...
Just to wrap this item up, I agree with my colleagues that it's important to have flexibility, but I also think a rubber stamp, it doesn't work for the city. It's important to look at each project individually, and I know Commissioner Richardson, you were concerned about... this item, it's a policy call. It happens all the time here, so it's mincing words a little bit. This particular project, I'm always concerned with reducing parking because I do walk, but I also like to drive to establishment. It rains a lot here. The weather's not always great, and they did a traffic impact analysis, and as Tracy explained, because it's an office, those office parking spaces would be available when the restaurant hours would be open and they would need it, and the parking garage is right there.
And I totally support the item.
Thank you.
And thanks for bringing it, and thank you for allowing me to make my point. and I might bring an item to add a little bit of, I think one size doesn't fit all, but we need a little bit more flexibility, you know, because there are other neighborhoods where we don't need the 1 to 4 as well.
Yeah.
It's not one size fits all. But I move the item, I support it, and I'm glad we're able to get it done.
Mr. You'll see that building plus other buildings that are coming up the pike in Sunset Harbor, it's really going to make it.
And yep. Mr. Chairman, we also have a caller on Zoom.
Okay, we have someone on call. Zelman, do you want to wait to see who's on the call?
The caller is Matthew.
Is he a rabbi?
Okay. Matthew, okay.
Nick, you owe me a phone call.
All right. Zelman, give a second here. How about the caller? Matthew?
Matthew, you have 2 minutes.
Yes, good morning. Hi. No, not a rabbi. Matthew Goltano. very, very important discussion. I always like to hear to talk about parking, whether it's supply or demand. I do have a concern. A lot of these restaurants do... whether they have on-site parking or not, required parking or not, they do valet parking. And the concern is that they may have a reduced or removed parking requirement. Therefore, they wouldn't have to pay the parking in lieu impact fees. But they still may have an impact. They still may do valet off-site. They still may take up supply from other parking uses or other uses. They still will impact the right-of-way, contributing to more trips to and from the restaurant. So I just want to stress that concern there, right? The goal should be to help increase the walkability, the bikeability, the transit of the city to reduce car usage so there is no or less of a parking need. And if it's just to eliminate that impact fee, well, where is the rest of that money going to come from to help fund these improvements? Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Zalman Felig. I'd like to say I'm a pioneer in Sunset Harbor, 43 years and thank God strong. I fully support this item. I think it's good for the neighborhood, and I just want to thank you all for your support as well.
Great.
Have a nice day.
And I think you have some exciting projects coming to the neighborhood soon.
That is correct.
Can't
thank
wait.
You.
Okay. So, great. Okay. Well, this item passes unanimously. So I'm going to call up item number 10, and
Mr.
I don't
Chair,
know.
Just if I could just.
Oh, please, sorry.
I was in my office just finalizing items for the commission. I'm so sorry. But I just want to put on the record, Commissioner Dominguez, I support your item. I think these are one of the things that we can do to help these businesses in these areas. We want to make sure that spaces remain occupied as well. Nothing could be better for pedestrianism and the character of an area. So happy to support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Let's call up item number 10, which is another Sunset Harbor item. Commissioner Dominguez, this is yours. It's to discuss potential amendments to the height regulations for properties located in the interior part of the Sunset Harbor neighborhood.
So I was approached by the Sunset Harbor Neighborhood Association, and we had a meeting with Tom and Nick from the city attorney's office. Since they have been working on the vision plan that was recently adopted in the last couple of years, the request of the Sunset Harbor Neighborhood Association was to make sure that the interior properties were ironed out and there wasn't anything that needed further discussion. Tom, did you have anything further?
Yeah, this is basically just a general discussion on the current height requirements within the interior area of Sunset Harbor. This was not a dual referral to the planning board. There's no ordinance attached to this. It's just a general discussion, and if there's any recommendations of this committee, we could certainly take those back to the full commission.
Okay. Colleagues, come on up. Colleagues, anything else? I mean, I'm not aware of any development at the moment afoot on the interior part of Sunset Harbor. I am aware of developments, particularly on the Alton Road side for offices. But is there anything going on the interior?
Sarah de los Reyes, Sunset Harbor Neighborhood Association. The reason why I brought this up is because of 1920 Alton. 1920 Alton, which is actually in front of the Palau, has become an 87 feet tall building. And in the vision plan 4 years ago, we raised the whole neighborhood by 10 feet. I-1 10 feet, CD2 by 10 feet. Not knowing that now flood elevation is a requirement on all the building that brings up the height to 15 feet. On top of 55 feet, that's A-1. On top of 25, the building will become a 75, 80-foot thing. So what we wanted to do was to make sure the I-1 in front of the residential for the quality and to keep up, you know, the existing residential, investment, we want to make sure that the height doesn't get so high in the middle of it. We have agreed that the whole edge, we can go higher. They need the higher ceiling. We have approved a lot of things there. And I think in the middle, in front of townhomes, in front of the North and South Tower, in front of Palau, the loft is a little bit different because they don't have anything in front of it because of the park, that we would keep the height down. And the flood has done this. It has raised it. So anything that we see there, it won't be the height of your garage. It will be a lot, you know, 20 feet higher. And that's what we wanted to bring to make sure in front of us it stays the way it was. So I wanted to bring it down by 10 feet. This way it compensates for the flood that we're going to have to do by law, because we have to do 15 foot, 10 feet of flood and 5 feet of freeboard. That's 15 feet. And then 25 feet of the rooftop and 55 feet the building. You know, they said, oh, they built to code. Yeah, 55 feet is to code, but the building is 80-something feet high in front of us. So that's why. And we want to make sure the quality of life, and that doesn't change. Just like your Art Deco district that you want lower and the edge is high, we want to do the same thing in Sunset Harbor. That's why I brought it up. That's why it was an item that I thought it was important for the whole neighborhood for the future.
Okay. Thank you. Colleagues, anything on this? Zelman, do you have anything? Is there any callers?
Zelman Felig. I just find it ironic that I remember when Betzak, the developer for the Sunset Harbor Towers, was fighting for his air rights, and they built two huge towers, that she's concerned about that in Sunset Harbor. I do have a lot of properties in the industrial area, and I feel everything should stay the way it is. I think it's safe. I think it's good. I mean, flooding is part of what we're dealing with, and I deal with it on it quite often, as Joe Gomez can tell you, the director of Public Works, and I'm working with the city to, you know, tweak, and I've worked with, from the day one, you know, with the flooding and all that going on in Sunset Harbor. I will say on record that it actually works in Sunset Harbor nicely. Obviously, everything needs tweaks. We were the first area to get that pumps in and the generators. I was actually the one that implemented to make sure that we had generators in the neighborhood. I'm a type of person, I look at the positive parts of Sunset Harbor. I want to say that I was a pioneer in bringing in a lot of nice users in Sunset Harbor, and I just like to continue. It organically came to produce a beautiful neighborhood, and I appreciate you working with the new developer that's coming into the neighborhood. I appreciate it, and just to be, you know, not too less restrictions, obviously, things that need to be restricted, I understand. And I think you guys are very common sense, and you do things very well, and you all think things out what's best for the neighborhood, and I appreciate that. Tom, we are 25 years in going, and Eric, my friend, so I just want to say thank you to all. Take care.
Well, I mean, is there any action required on this right now?
It was just a discussion.
Yeah. I mean, to your knowledge, there's nothing going on yet or at all that you want to get ahead of it. Okay. So, I mean, where I'm at, I live in the neighborhood, you know, I want to be mindful, right? I don't want to just start seeing tall buildings in the interior. I think that changes the character of the neighborhood. But I want to be flexible on a case-by-case basis if something really is good and they can convince, you know, at least five of us that it's a good idea. But I'm also mindful of the new legislation out of Tallahassee, which could override us if it's the Live Local Act, right? So if somebody comes in and is going to do 40% of the units for workforce housing, then height kind of just goes out the window, as does density, right?
Density increases, but height would be a more significant increase because it's the highest height within a mile,
yeah,
which in this case would probably be about 150 feet.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying is no matter what we do today, we would still be trumped by that law. Yeah.
Well, but if they can have that kind of height, then the economics would make sense. That's the reason the state law changed, and that's already changed. And I'll tell you the other thing, we're going to hear another item here on FAR, because the state is taking a more active role because they see local governments are going too far. And this is what happens. It is no accident that this FAR item was brought. We were able to kill the one item, but the other one passed. But the other one's coming back, and they're specifically targeting Miami Beach. I want you to think about that. They brought the bill. They got a carve-out for St. Augustine, a carve-out for Palm Beach, a carve-out for Key West. They refuse to do a carve-out for Miami Beach because they're specifically targeting our city because they're people that think we've gone too far. And so we have to find the right balance or we're going to lose everything. And I'm really worried about next year, about this bill that didn't pass this year, because I've been told by the leadership that it's going to move next year. And we were able to stop it this year, but we need to find the right balance or we're going to lose everything in Miami Beach.
As you all know, in my document in the vision plan, we gave 10 feet height to the whole neighborhood 4 years ago. In CD2, the whole neighborhood. I'm saying CD2 and I-1. I'm okay. We're okay with the edge.
I-1 too?
Yeah, we did. Thank so you. That's I know. So now we didn't know about the flood. Then we didn't know about these things coming that I do worry in our neighborhood. So we have to keep, we want to keep the middle area in a certain height. We cannot, we have to, I would want it lowered just to 10 feet just to be even right now. And we gave the 10 feet. Now, no, if I would have known this, we would have never gave, I won the 10 feet. We would have left CD2 higher, the edge, which is fine. You can have 100, you know, you have already 99 feet buildings in yeah. at the edge.
I will tell you, I mean, I supported and helped enact the vision plan.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's good overall for the neighborhood, but I also think it was intelligent by keeping it at the edge. You literally keep it out of the middle, right?
Right, exactly. That's what, and I'm worried about.
Because if
that
all
now.
The office use, for example, which is what really is going to go tall, goes to the outside, they're not going to come to the inside.
Exactly.
Nobody wants to look down at a parking lot or Publix garage. You know, you know. So
it's going to be higher than the garage because it will be higher no matter what. You remember, you still have the flood. The flood is not going to stay at 15 feet, guys. Yeah. It's going to go up higher.
The things that go higher are typically residential, yeah. right? And so. I don't know that there's no guarantee that the residential doesn't want to be in the interior. They want to be near the water. They want to be, you know, on the outside. So anything that's going to be in the interior will probably be commercial in nature. Mm-hmm.
It has a one far, and I understand that, and they explained that to me very clearly. But we still, we gave up 10 feet now. We would like to take that 10 feet at least back. So this way it makes it a little bit even when it comes to the flood elevation. And that's what I brought it up because I 1920 was a good example how we became 87 feet. Even DRB gave him 3 feet. DRB gave him height because DRB is allowed to give height. So that hurts us in terms of in front of the whole neighborhood. So I think it's something that we need to, I hope you guys can make it into an ordinance or change it back to the way it was. I think it would help the neighborhood and we'll keep it the way it was.
But Sarah, just to the point, under the new state law, if you reduce the height 10 feet, 15, then maybe the economics don't work for a developer. And then what they do is they come into your neighborhood and do a workforce housing project where they get over 100 feet. And then you've lost your – is that what you want? I mean, what would you do?
It was originally 45.
What is it?
It was originally 45.
Within a mile. So the highest building within a mile could be in your neighborhood as long as they make 40% workforce housing.
Wow.
That's under state law right now.
Yeah.
They wouldn't need anything from us. And so you could have a tall building right in the middle of your neighborhood as long as 40% of it's workforce housing.
Well, I don't know. What do you want? How we can actually try to reduce it? I don't know what to tell you. This is the only way I can think of. I didn't know about 150 feet. I mean, this is even bigger than the edge of CD2.
Yeah, I mean, so this new Live Local Act is, I mean, it's designed to tackle the affordability housing problem that the whole state has. And it really would impact cities like ours that really have an affordability issue, which basically just preempts us so that if a project has 40% workforce housing, they can avail themselves of the tallest building within a mile, which obviously within a mile of Miami Beach, you've got really tall buildings.
Right.
The only limitation would be our FAR, but there's a movement afoot in this next legislative session to basically, you know, even override us now. Now, basically, FAR used to be require voter referendum. Now it goes back to the commission. So the commission can give FAR to a developer. So then you get a developer coming in saying, I want 40% workforce housing, they're no longer limited by the height or the density that the city has. They can avail themselves of the maximum density in a mile also. I think that's the way that reads as well.
Yeah, it's the maximum density. We already have a fairly high density bonus for workforce and affordable housing. The biggest tangible impact would be the height. And within a mile, I think the height limit is actually closer to 200 feet.
Oh, a mile, Miami Beach? I mean, we have towers that are 40 stories tall. So,
Mr. Chairman, we have one caller on Zoom when you're ready.
Okay, who is it?
Bruce. Oh, Bruce Backman.
Okay. Good morning, Bruce.
Bruce, you have 2 minutes.
Hi. No, thank you. I just wanted to clarify on that live local. So that is already in effect, and that would override the one-to-one FAR if someone decided to do the workforce housing. Does the workforce housing have the same definition as we have in our city here?
It does.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that would they would be able to get rid of the one-to-one FAR that exists for the I-1, and what would the density actually go up to potentially?
Well, the Live Local Act overrides us as to density, but not specifically as to FAR. The chairman also mentioned this, that there's a movement to potentially add FAR to the Live Local Act next year. Yeah. But right now it's just density and height.
But right now, okay. So if we pass something about that now, that would not yet be preempted, because that has not.
Well, this particular item relates to height, and the Live Local Act does preempt us as to height.
I think what we might want to do, Sarah, is maybe get Zelman and some other folks develop that interior really quickly and block out any residential projects that would go, truth, 20 stories.
I'm really visioning it. It's the truth.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a Publix and a Fresh Market, so that takes care of that. But we do have those storage facilities. And
there's a storage.
And the Office Depot. You have a bunch of projects that.
Well, that's at the edge. That's city too. That can be.
Yeah, but still. Yeah.
Still, we'll be high. Yeah. It will be Bay Road. It will be. Yeah. It will be the where sushi, Pabelli Sushi. If that building is sold.
Well, that one. Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the one in the corner. Sushi where Garage. Sardinia is and the boxing place.
And the
Right, those three places right there, just and Larry's, Larry's that has a big.
Yeah.
Like, big foot right there. And
so Zelman, will you please develop your properties really quickly? Don't go too high.
I'm on it.
Don't go too high.
Anybody, any investors here?
Yeah.
Well, that's the reason why I brought it up, because we're thinking of the future, and like we did 4 years ago and raised the whole neighborhood. Now this is bringing us into like, oh my God, things are going to be even higher with flood. Flood is not going to stay at 15. It's going to probably go 20 eventually. I'm telling you right now.
Just wanted to put on the record. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you.
Yeah. I like it when you guys get along.
Yeah, yeah. No, we're going out for dinner tonight. A kosher. Kosher restaurant, Sarah.
You don't need parking. That's taken care
Absolutely
of.
Absolutely not.
Okay. Well, all right. Nice to see everyone this morning. Do you have any more today? You're just going to watch the theatrics for the rest of the meeting? You're just going to watch the rest of the theatrics of today? Okay. All right. I see my friend Kobe in the back. What item are you here for, Kobe?
For item 10, are we going to show this as discussed and concluded?
Discussed, concluded, under advisement,
Okay.
I mean, I think we're all sensitive to the issue.
Okay.
I'm particularly worried about more statewide preemptions.
Well, I know for sure they're going to come hard after historic preservation.
Yeah.
The FAR is likely. I don't know how that'll turn out. We've got an item to discuss it. We've got two items to discuss that, 4 and 5, and I'll talk about it then. But, I think we've got to be mindful of the things that we say and do trigger a reaction, an inverse reaction at Tallahassee. So we just got to be cautious about what we do, because then they just override us. Marilyn, you had your hand up for item 3. Yes, you wanted to hear item 3? Did you say 3? Okay. Commissioner Fernandez, this is yours. An amendment to the land development regulations to require conditional use approval for alcoholic beverage establishments on rooftop, where such rooftop is located in close proximity to a building containing residential units. So what is this about?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what has been brought to our attention is that there are areas in our city, like, for example, on Collins Avenue, where rooftop terraces may exist in close proximity to residential buildings. And there are new efforts from establishments to establish alcoholic beverage operations on these rooftops. And what this seeks to do is not necessarily to flat out prohibit them, but what this seeks to do is require a conditional use permit when an alcoholic beverage establishment is looking to open on a rooftop that is within a certain proximity of residential buildings, of buildings containing residential units. That way, those condominium associations, those residents are aware of the intended operation that's looking to open near them. They can see the operational plans. If the planning board determines that there's a need to put any limitation on hours or anything needs to be done for controlling sound, that can be done. But that it's an effort to create a safeguard for the people that live in the residential buildings close by. And certainly this is important because we always think of what's occurring on the ground level, but when something like this occurs at a rooftop surrounding other tall buildings, we know the noise goes up. And we know the noise reverberates off of buildings, and so we just want to be mindful of that, and that's what this legislation seeks to address. Tom, I don't know if there's anything else that we should place on the record about this. Any other clarification?
Tom, I just want to, if you don't mind, regarding the other discussion, I just want to put on record that I represented. I sent the proxy to Nick. That I represented Asana Brian Purcell with the item. You're aware of that, right?
And we can talk offline if you'd like, but if you are appearing on behalf of a third party, you would need to register as a lobbyist for them. So I don't – we can talk offline.
You'll call me, but I'm just saying he sent me – he gave me the authorization to speak on his behalf with a proxy. I think I shared the email with you, right? I think I shared it with some of the commissioners.
Set it offline. It's paperwork.
Right. So I just wanted to mention that on the record.
Thank you.
On this one, Commissioner, your explanation was spot on. The only thing I would add is that – this was reviewed by the planning board because this was a dual referral, and the planning board did recommend in favor of this proposal, and it is scheduled to go before the city commission for first reading next Wednesday, July 26th.
And through the chair or the vice chair, Tom, did the planning board have any recommendation? I know that they sent a favorable recommendation. I know at times they'll make a recommendation, or is there?
Yeah, they, for clarity purposes, they recommended including the words open air portions above the roof. And we did include that within this draft ordinance for clarity purposes.
Okay. And with that, and what was the vote?
7-0.
7-0. Perfect.
And this is within 200 feet, if there's a residential within 200 feet?
Correct.
Which is, how far is 200 feet? Is that about 14 car lengths or something like that? Or?
Yeah, it's if you're dealing with zoning districts that have 50-foot lots, it's probably within 3 to 4 lots. Bigger properties, obviously, it would be the next property over if it's really, really big oceanfront-type properties. But 200 feet is a good form of measurement because it's very definitive.
I'm sorry, it's what?
It's a very definitive type of measurement.
Mm-hmm. And is that... is it 200 feet from the corner of the building to the corner of the building? Or
property line to property line.
Property line to property line. And it wouldn't prohibit it. It's just they would have to get
a conditional use, correct.
Right.
I'm not opposed to that. Is this specific, are we targeting any particular property with this? Or
this is prospective. So this would only affect new establishments moving forward.
So this is one of the things that sound good to me. I just want to make sure I'm not missing something. Yeah. How did this come up for you, Commissioner Fernandez? Is there anything in particular, or are you just trying to get ahead of?
Well, no. I mean, there is a concern in a certain part of our city where this is actually occurring. Right next to a high rise, there is another.
It's an existing use.
No.
No, it's going to be a new use. It's something coming online.
Thomas's.
It's a permitted use that is expected to come online
okay.
in the future, and the okay. residents of this building were very concerned about this use that's moving forward.
Right, and so the concern is if it's happening there, it could potentially happen in other areas of our city, and you know usually when you are. In one of these buildings, you're in a 20th floor or 30th floor. You don't anticipate to have that in close proximity to you.
Yeah.
And my bigger concern is that one thing is when these operations are on the ground floor or even on the rooftop of like a 2 or 3 story building. Another thing is, you know, when you are 10 stories up the ground and now, you know, you have other buildings around you and the noise reverberates.
Yep.
And that to me, it's a concern. With this, you know, the operation can still occur, but if you need to do any sound attenuation, you need to do any control, so you can get ahead of that before an impact.
It's not a prohibition. This is a putting the brakes on and going through the process of
exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
So the safeguards can be put in place.
I'm surprised we didn't already have this, to be honest. Colleagues, you support this?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm supportive.
My only question is 200 the right number? Is it 250 or is it 150? Are you comfortable with 200?
Yeah, we actually went through a couple of different numbers, and we think 200 is a good number.
Okay, I support.
One of the things that Tom and I discussed when we were considering this ordinance is not just, for example, the abutting properties where you may share a property line, but also the distance, let's say, if you're a rooftop, But the property, let's say across the street, that might be also affected, or across an alley, and so we considered this part of the stuff that was considered when we were drafting this ordinance and considering the distance that should be considered.
Okay.
All right. So I'll show it by acclamation. I'll show favorable recommendation from the Land Use Committee.
Thank you. Sure. Okay. Doing well on time. All right, let's call up item number 4. Commissioner Fernandez, this one's yours. This is to establish a policy for the review of future FAR increase requests, including analysis of impacts, community outreach, and public engagement. You want to introduce this?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. As has been mentioned, during this session of the Florida legislature, they passed a bill which prohibits local communities and governments from requiring referendums for amendments to their land development regulations, including with those our prohibition on going to the voters on FAR increases. In essence, when the governor signed SB 718 into law, not only preempted us as a government, it preempted our electorate. It preempted our community that passed the charter amendment a number of years ago to require voter approval before increases in floor area ratio. Now that our local government and our own residents have been preempted and deprived of that ability, you know, the process now comes back to the governing body, to us, and I wanted to make sure that that there was a clear laid out process for the consideration of FAR increases, so that there is a fair vetting process, so that everyone goes through the same process, and it's one that people can be. That requests can be considered objectively, not politically, not through attack or slander or not through anything else other than what is objective and correct standards to consider something of significance in a city like ours, like a floor area increase. So what this item does, and I'll let Tom and Nick walk the body through the item, but it creates two different processes. A process for consideration of an applicant-initiated FAR increase, and then a separate process for commission-initiated FAR increases that address more broad policy, that are not site-specific but address more general zoning districts, or that address policies of incentives, whether it be for workforce housing or to de-incentivize certain transient uses, but laying out what the process would be under both scenarios. Mr. Chair, if you allow me, I'd like to recognize the planning director and the assistant city attorney to guide the body through the draft that's before us.
Okay, great. Nick, I'll go ahead and start this, and if you need to jump in on anything. As Commissioner Fernandez indicated, this particular ordinance sets up a very defined process that expands upon our current process for LDR amendments. Currently, as the committee may be aware, anytime and there's an amendment proposed to the LDRs, it has to be referred to the Planning Board. The Planning Board conducts a public hearing and transmits a recommendation where there's two hearings before the Commission. In this particular proposal, we would distinguish two different types of eligible applicants. The first would be a private applicant for those FAR increases that are proposed to be within either a development site or a private property, what we would call property-specific FAR increases. And if a private application is filed, there would be a requirement that if it's within a local historic district, that the exhibits and the applications would be sent to the Miami Design Preservation League. And then the City Commission would be responsible for those applications that are much broader from a policy standpoint. Additionally, in order for the Commission to refer an FAR increase to the Planning Board to start the process, a 5/7 vote of the Commission would be required for the referral. Currently, it's a 4/7 vote requirement. Once you got the referral to the Planning Board or made a private application to the Planning Board, there would be a three-step process at the Planning Board. Step one would consist of a Planning Board preliminary review, and this would be a publicly noticed Planning Board hearing where the Planning Board would consider an impact analysis that would be prepared by the city administration. This would include calculating the actual square footage proposed for the FAR increase for all the affected properties, the infrastructure analysis that would address potential impacts on traffic and mobility, parking, water, sewer, resiliency, parks, open space, as well as any other area of concern that might be identified by either the City Commission, if it's a commission referral, or by the administration. And then number three, massing studies, which illustrate the volume and location of the area associated with it. The impacts of, or the findings of this impact analysis, including the massing studies and the overall calculations, would be considered by the Planning Board at their preliminary review. After the Planning Board conducts a preliminary review, there would then be a community outreach meeting, which would be separate from the Planning Board meeting. And this would be for all public stakeholders to have the opportunity to provide additional input and feedback, as well as for staff to address any issues, questions, or concerns that may be proposed. This meeting would also be advertised in accordance with our community meeting notice protocol. After the community outreach meeting, the Planning Board would then conduct, and this would be step three, their transmittal hearing. It would be a second duly noticed public hearing where the Planning Board would discuss the any questions or issues raised at the community meeting, and then they would transmit a recommendation to the planning to the City Commission. The third component would be the City Commission review. And this would also consist of a three-step process. Step one would be a first reading public hearing. That's a little bit different than what is currently required, because now for a typical FAR increase, since it's a text amendment, there's only one public hearing required. This would be a first reading public hearing. And then the notice for the first reading public hearing would be the same as a private application, which would require a minimum 30-day mail and publish notice. Step two, after the first reading public hearing at the City Commission, there would be another community workshop that would be scheduled, which is separate and apart from the two readings before the City Commission. This would require a courtesy notice as determined by the City Commission, and this particular community workshop could consist of a virtual, in-person, or hybrid format as determined by the City Commission. After this community workshop, the second reading adoption hearing would be scheduled before the City Commission, at which time the City Commission would consider adoption of the proposed FAR increase. Notice for second reading would be in accordance with the applicable provisions of the LDRs.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Tom, for your work on this. So one of the things I want to put on the record is that in order for this to be initiated, again, if it's a site-specific FAR increase, it's something that would be initiated by not the City Commission, as we've experienced in the past at this table, but instead by an applicant that would submit an application directly to the Planning Board so that the Planning Board can vet that without any judgment prior preconceived influence from the City Commission that because we're referring this to the Planning Board that we want it to be to receive a favorable recommendation, or because they heard any of our comments that now they don't want this. Now, the ones that are initiated by the City Commission that relate to more broad policy, to zoning districts or to incentives and that type of stuff, one of the things that I think is important to note about those is that it would require, under the proposed item that's before us, a 5/7 vote of the City Commission. And I think that's an important threshold to set for the referral, because right now the bar has been that it requires a voter referendum. But in our charter, what we have is a system that when we have a requirement for a voter referendum, but we choose not to do the voter referendum, the alternative is that it can be approved by a 6/7 vote of the city commission. That doesn't apply for FAR, but it applies to, like, for alienation of public lands and that type of stuff. I believe that that the same threshold should be required for the ultimate approval of FAR increases at the City Commission. But at the very minimum, if you're going to go through this rigorous process, you want to make sure that at least you have five commissioners who are willing to engage in this process. It's easy to reach that 4/7 threshold, but then you're subjecting city staff or to go through this process, which is a rigorous process, as it should be. But you want to make sure that there truly is buy-in from the City Commission because of the amount of work that it would require. So that's why here I'm suggesting that we do a 5/7 threshold to initiate the referral. And the last thing I want to point out, the last two things I want to point out is that when it starts at the Planning Board, when that process initiates there for Planning Board review, that we are sending a 30-day mailed and published notice to the community so that they are well aware, so that they can't come at the end of the process and be surprised at that moment that this is going on. This has to be advertised 30 days before the first hearing at the Planning Board and likewise at the City Commission so that you don't reach the end of the process at the City Commission. Now, all of a sudden, people are just finding out about it, requiring that 30-day notice at the beginning as well. And the last thing is that what's most important here is that we're also now incorporating into this the analysis of traffic impacts, parking impacts, sewer capacity impacts, which we have to consider, because these are the infrastructure impacts that ultimately – we as taxpayers need to absorb, and we need to understand well as we consider these items. So, Mr. Chair, I want to thank you for allowing me to present this item. I want to thank Tom and Nick for working on this. I don't know if from the city attorney's side you have any input you would like to chime in with.
No, thank you, Commissioner. I think you and Tom have covered anything. The only thing I would add is just that the impetus for this obviously is Senate Bill 718, which prohibits a referendum on a land development regulation. It did leave in place charter requirements as to rezonings, which would be from, let's say, CD2 to CD3, as by way of example. That would still require a referendum. But for any other land development regulation, including an FAR increase, a referendum is no longer required.
Not only is it no longer required, it's prohibited.
It's prohibited. Right. That's right.
Yeah. You know, I listened to your presentation, Commissioner Fernandez, and I want to compliment you. Well presented and well thought out. I mean, I want to digest because there's a lot there. But, you know, I'm impressed because most of what I heard, if not more, was not, at least when I listened to it, not particularly onerous. I think it's fair. You know, and I do think we need some procedures that guide us and that also give the community sufficient input and time to reflect and opine that we will follow if and when FAR increase requests come forward, really to protect ourselves so that we're not sloppy and do things haphazardly. I think a process is required because this is a significant change for our city and potentially, sort of the future of development in our city. So I think having good, sensible policies that guide us on how we treat FAR increase requests is well served for us as a commission, and I think it's well served for our community to understand this will be the process by which developers have to go, because it in the wrong hands, FAR can be very catastrophic in some cases, and can be very disruptive to neighborhoods.
Right.
So it's important that we have good, deliberate processes. I for one have always thought we overdid it back in 1999 with the down zoning. It was sort of a one size fits all, and I think it's held back some development that's needed, particularly in affordability. And there's a reason our housing prices have skyrocketed. Besides being an amazing city to live in, it's also very hard to develop here. Most of the development that happens these days is ultra luxury because that's where the money is. Because partly is we have such strict FAR limitations, and that's what prompted Tallahassee to preempt us. And so I think we have to be mindful that they're watching, and if we overdo it, they'll preempt us again, and then we'll lose control of our city. So I like what I heard. I want to digest it, but I like what I heard. So, colleagues?
So sort of ties in with the next item, item 5, I think, with the 6th, 7th vote. And I like the idea of having a process. And so I'm in agreement with almost everything you said, but I think we have to be very careful that, and I'm not going to support the next item, not because I think it's a bad idea, but because I think it's going to trigger some additional action in Tallahassee. And so I think we have to be very careful about right now on FAR, we have a 5-7 threshold. If we were to move to 6-7, I can promise you next year there'll be an amendment to the state law, and it'll be a simple majority. And so that piece of this I'm a little worried about. I love having all the process and the community outreach and all of that. I'm a little worried about the 5-7 because I'm worried that it's going to trigger a reaction in Tallahassee.
Mr. Chair? Thank you. And so I thank you for the feedback. One of the things that I just want to note, the item on the 6-7 vote from one of our colleagues. It's a separate item.
Right.
I do feel that given the nature of the amount of work that goes into this, even the fact that for an ultimate adoption by the City Commission, you're going to need a 5/7 vote, and the significant nature of an FAR increase, I think it's good to still have that higher threshold, because it is something more significant than your typical land development regulation. It highlights that significance and the importance of the process that's about to engage in, and the amount of public resources that our own staff is going to have to engage in, something that shouldn't be just entered into lightly with a simple 4/7 vote. If anything, because of the amount of staff time, the amount of studies, the amount of advertising and publicizing of meetings that it's going to take. I want to make sure that even when we start one of these referrals, that there is strong buy-in from the City Commission, more than just that simple 4/7 vote, because it is going to be very time-consuming from our staff and from our community.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So under our current ordinance, Tom, we can do a referral to the planning board with 4/7, mm-hmm. but if it's a FAR increase, it'll be 5/7?
Correct.
So you're just saying you want to signal the 5/7 up front rather than doing all the work and then coming back, doing a referral and then coming back and then needing 5/7 when you might not have had that and you did all this work.
And to be noted, this only applies to broad policy referrals to the planning board that of the City Commission. When we're talking about, you know, FAR for all of CD2 or for an overlay, because when it's something more specific to a property, you know, let's say a property owner needs an FAR increase in order to make it economically viable to rehabilitate a building and bring it back into functional use, that individual wouldn't need that 5/7 vote, because they're not coming first to the City Commission. They're applying directly to the planning board, and they're initiating their process there. But this is the work that we're telling our city administration, our planners, our attorneys, that we want them to engage in this process, to, you know, consider, you know, for a certain zoning district, we want to increase FAR to promote workforce housing. Well, something like that, given the process that we're going to require, making sure that it's not just four of us, that it's five of us who agree initiating in that process, since ultimately it's going to require five people at the end of the day to approve the increase.
And so if someone makes a private application, then they pay a fee? Is that the way that works?
Yeah, you would have to pay the fee even if you are referred to the planning board, even if the commission makes a referral on behalf of a private applicant. But in this particular instance, since they are making the private application, all the applicable fees would have to be paid before they went to the planning board.
But they would not need 5/7 vote. They could just make. So what's the difference of one? Because they have to pay a fee under both circumstances, right?
Yeah, in this particular instance, since it is benefiting a private property or a group of properties controlled by private entities, I believe the rationale under this proposal was that it should start with that private entity.
Mm-hmm. And if I may, through the chair, what I also want to make sure is that if it initiates with the City Commission, you know, I trust the Planning Board to be a very objective body to be able to consider items independently, but at the end of the day, we appoint the planning board, and they have ultimately to come back before us as a body to seek reappointment. And here we are sending them, you know, voting to send them something significant like an FAR increase. And I think it comes with, you know, a certain pressure.
you know, that now the people who appointed you have voted to send you this application for this, you know, powerful property owner that wants an FAR increase. I think we give these FAR requests that may potentially come in the future a more objective hearing when they're not initiated by the political body, but they're initiated by an applicant that goes directly to the planning board, and the planning board hasn't been influenced in any way by the comments of the political body, which sometimes I do think could at times weigh heavily on the planning board because we end up appointing them.
I will say, as I listened to each of the steps in the processes, none of them struck me as overly onerous. You know, it would have to, I'd have to see these things play out in the future, and then, you know, maybe we did a great job, maybe we have to dial things back. The only one that sort of jumped out at me was the 5/7 vote versus the 4/7, but I think you articulated it well, because the amount of work that, you know, this, if we adopt this, would require for staff and even the applicant, you know, it could be exhaustive. And if they're not going to have the support, then we're wasting everybody's time. So, I'm more open to the 5/7 threshold than I thought I was going to be because of what you said. You know, it makes sense to talk about item 5, and we'll call it up formally. But I'm against it for some of the reasons Commissioner Richardson said. You know, I think it basically is telling Tallahassee that we're going to ignore you. We're going to make it impossible to, you know, follow your instructions. And so they'll preempt us again, being two owners. And then also the 6/7 vote. If we adopt what you're saying, Commissioner Fernandez, I think it satisfies the concerns that a lot of residents and even elected officials may have about, you know, FAR increases in the future. The 6/7 vote, what really concerns me is I've seen it so many times here, is you're basically giving one of us a veto, and and also use the word extortion that will occur over those developers that are coming forward for good projects that might have broad community support and commission support. You can hold out, you know, with your lone vote and leave everyone twisting in the wind to extract maximum amount of things that might benefit a certain elected official under the rubric of public benefit, but clearly it's geared towards getting them votes and not necessarily making a project better or something better for the community. So I'm very skeptical about things that give, you know, so much control to any one body or person or committee. But I think you have articulated a path here that puts in a lot of safeguards for our community with very sensible processes and procedures that are, you know, frankly, consistent with a lot of stuff that we already do. We're just formalizing it. So, you know, colleagues, I don't know what you want to do. If you want to vote on this today, sleep on it, bring it back next time and formally vote on it.
Mr. Chair, may I have public
Please input? Come on up. Yeah, we I think we need public input because what are we missing here? What are we blowing? You know, do we got it right? Because it sounds pretty good to me, and I'm usually skeptical about these kinds of things. So what aren't we talking about?
If I may, Neeson Kasdan, and it's true, you know, first reaction might be, uh-oh, here comes another process. It's going to be very burdensome. But when you look at this, there's a lot of wisdom in what Commissioner Fernandez is proposing. And it also eliminates some of the sort of the confusion and the chaos by having a defined process of public input and also defined analysis of impacts. And that is, I think, what is sort of the genius of what is proposed. Now, there are a couple tweaks I will mention before the end of my comments, but let me focus on those two points. Right now, you have a situation where very frequently neighbors or civic groups are saying they didn't get enough notice or participation. Or on the other side, you may have property owners who say, it's a game of whack-a-mole. I don't know who I have to talk to and when I have to talk and how many times I have to talk. So what Commissioner Fernandez's process is doing is making a formal process. And it's basically saying that there's going to be a public workshop, actually two, that will be, that everyone who is affected, either proximately or organizations, will get notice. So that way the developer and property owner doesn't have to be guessing who they have to reach out to, and the citizen groups that have an interest in it will have access. So I think that's a great feature. The other, and one thing that I'd like to say about that, though, as well, is if you go back to the 1980s and before, even when I was on the planning board, remember the planning board, and I like the fact that Commissioner Fernandez is focusing this on the planning board, because under state law, it is the local planning agency, as it is under the city charter. Their main job, their main purpose is to deal with master planning and zoning of the city, not to decide how many seats a cafe can have or not. And you have a good planning board, you appoint good people to that board. So I think centering the process there, I think, is a smart idea. One suggestion I would make, though, with regard to that, is in the olden days, the planning board used to have workshops. I think the planning board should be defined as the convener of the workshop. And it could be here, it could even be on off-site, but I think it should be under their aegis, under the aegis of the planning board and the planning department, that the workshops, and they should be called workshops, and the outreach should be conducted. So that's one change I would make. And I would also point out that one thing that is very beneficial is all the impact studies that are being required and requested. That's going to also clear up a lot of myth and misinformation as well, so that everyone, whether it's the decision makers or the public, is dealing with the facts, which are often not the case in these things. But so my first suggestion is that it be further centered, you know, the workshop of the planning board. One thing I would suggest, though, is I think there's one step too many that's put in at the planning board level. And what that is you go to the planning board. Remember, there's a referral to the planning board. The planning board, there's a public notice to all the affected neighbors and interest groups. And prior to the planning board first considering it, the studies have to be done in terms of impact, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then the planning board would consider it. Then it would go to a public workshop. Then it would go back to the planning board again. That first planning board meeting should be the public workshop, since everyone, the citizens, the property owners and developers, the planning board will have all the studies in hand. Everyone will have received notice of it. That first meeting of the planning board should be the public workshop to discuss it, as opposed to having a subsequent public workshop. So I think you could remove one step, and I think it would make it more efficient. Secondarily, another thing that I think needs to be, and again, as I say, it should be, I think, under the aegis, these community meetings, at least at the planning board level, by the planning board, by the planning department, organized by them, so we have a fair and impartial organizer. The other thing that I think needs to be included is an exclusion for de minimis or minimal FAR amendments, let's say under 10,000 feet or under 5,000 feet. There certainly is no need to take that through this extended process in that scenario. I might suggest that it be, you know, anyone that has an impact of less than 10,000 feet with any one particular property. You certainly want to not include single-family homes in that, because that's a whole nother thing that you want to address. But I think there needs to be a de minimis level, a cutoff beyond which this extra procedure is not required.
And what do you mean by that? What do you have in mind there?
Say that anything that has less than 10,000 square feet or 5,000 square feet, you don't have to have public workshops.
I didn't say that, but I made a note to myself, right? Yeah. There has to be, Commissioner Fernandez, you know, something to chew on. What Neeson's saying is something I was thinking about as I listened to you is, and I'm leaning more and more to everything you said, but is there a threshold we want this to kick in? Particularly, I'm thinking smaller projects, whether it's on a square foot basis or a threshold. You know, if I'm only going to ask for 0.25 more FAR or 0.5, because it just makes the project work, do I have to go through all this process? Because the process of all the impact studies is very expensive, and it may just not be worthwhile.
Or if I may, Commissioner Arriola, what if it's like a, like we did the other day a year or so ago with FPNL vaults? Let's say you want to change a definition and take mechanical rooms out, and it amounts to like 500 square feet per building. You know,
let me, through the chair, if I may. It's interesting. For example, I've seen in other jurisdictions. Let's say, like a parking garage. And sometimes you have parking garages that have level surfaces. And let's say it's an existing structure, and they need to convert a small area of that structure into an interior space, and it's something that's nominal. Right now, that garage doesn't count towards the FAR of a building. Is that correct, Nick?
If it's required parking.
But if it's access parking.
Well, even if it's access parking, if it was previously required parking and did not count in the FAR, we determined that you can't convert it to another use because you would be expanding the legal nonconformity. So there would need to be code relief in order to convert existing enclosed parking to some type of.
It would be an increase in FAR. So even though the structure is there, so you're really not creating a new building, you're not doing any new construction because it's an existing structure. You're just getting a piece of an existing structure. Now you're making it into a usable space because you're not really using it to its maximal potential. But now it ends up being an increase in FAR that here now it would have to go through. So I'm open to the idea. I would be interested to see what the planning board actually has to say about that, because I think to Neeson's point, the planning board is such a great tool that we have as a local planning agency, that I would love to get their input on that, as to, you know, smaller, very small, nominal FAR increases, and especially if it is associated to a structure that already exists. You know, if the structure is already there, and just the fact that you're getting this space and you're, you know, converting it to a different use, but you're now creating a new visual impact, a new massive structure or anything like that, you know, can we do something perhaps a little bit more streamlined and less involved for it? I'm willing to consider that and would value very much the input of the planning board on it.
Yeah, so I do think that's an important consideration, and I would, in looking at that, I would be curious to see whether or not we had a finite de minimis amount of square footage, or whether or not a percentage, or maybe both, up to 10% or whatever the number might be, as long as it didn't exceed so many feet. So I think that would be another way to look at it. And by the way, I think, you know, you've done a really good job of explaining the 5/7 and taking care of my concern there. So I started off by not wanting to support that, but I think you did a really good job of explaining it, since we have to get to 5/7 anyway. But I think these exclusions that Mr. Kasdan's mentioned certainly should be factored in there.
Before you go, Michael. Yeah, I mean, again, kudos to you, Commissioner Fernandez. Good job, you know. But I mean, it's big. I'm still digesting it.
Sure.
I do want us to think about what just came up. You know, are there certain, you know, thresholds in which, you know, maybe the way we handle it is it's just a waiver. We can have, let's say, for argument's sake, we adopt everything that's been proposed, and then we say, you know, sort of a notwithstanding clause, the commission by a 5/7 vote can waive the processes for requests that are below a certain threshold, you know. So basically, you have to follow the process, but you can apply for a waiver, but only in the case where it's a project of 10,000 square feet or less, 5,000 square feet or less, or you know, 0.25 FAR request. We cannot grant that waiver, or we can say it's such a small request for such an expensive and arduous, you know, process that, you know, 5 sentence vote will waive the process, but we still have to vote for any increase.
Right.
Something to think about. You don't have to
definitely. And I'll tell you, I'm very happy to ask the planning board for their input in that, because I think their expertise would be helpful in that this has to go through them as well, and I think that they would be a good body to give us their thoughts and their recommendation on this.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners Michael Larkin, 200 South Biscayne Boulevard. Just to give you all some comfort about what Commissioner Fernandez is proposing, it's not revolutionary. Like, we practice all over the county, and anytime a developer wants to propose a density or an intensity increase in Aventura, Miami-Dade County, they have to go through the same process. And what helps is that what Neeson said is correct. It creates an objective basis by which you can ask the developer, oh, this intersection is close to failing. Can you add a right turn lane, or can you resignalize? Instead of just people barking and complaining and yelling and screaming, no. There's an objective set of data that you can draw upon in order to make a request that mitigates in a reasonable fashion. And I think that you could even go beyond the infrastructure elements that Commissioner Fernandez has pointed to. Like, for instance, I have been suffering this miserable heat in the last couple of months, and it's just been like, is there anything that you can do to measure any type of quantifiable impact upon the heat island effect? Can you impose a green roof requirement? Can you impose a reciprocal amount of street tree planting that will offset the heat island increase that will occur? You know, there's something called biophilic design, where you're integrating nature into the actual elevation of your building. That's also something you all think about. There's the obvious infrastructure impacts, but we're a coastal barrier island, and we have something unique here. So thank you for your time.
Colleagues, what do you want to do here? Do you want to pass something to go to the full commission so the whole commission can opine on this, or do you want to workshop this one more meeting? Where do you guys think?
It sounds like you want to get the input of the planning board,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, I feel comfortable sending something in first reading to the city commission. I do want to say that I think this is a very important process that we are establishing. And I certainly would value the wisdom of the city commission that's had to deal with this with these issues, with different applicants that have come forward expressing interest in FAR increases, that we've lived through it. And so certainly the experience of the city commission is important for me in that process. I'm not a voting member of this body. But I would feel comfortable in its current form going for first reading to city commission, having then the feedback of the planning board.
Pardon the interruption.
Second reading.
Marilyn, Sarah, would you mind waiting? Because I want to call up item number 9. I'd love your opinion on it, if you don't mind. Sorry.
I apologize for interrupting. So, I mean, it's up to the will of you all. You are the voting members here, but I feel comfortable going to first reading and then getting the input of planning board, and then if we need to make any amendments before second reading, doing that. But I defer to you guys.
What about I would prefer just to send it back. Because it wasn't a dual referral, right?
It was, and it's actually this.
Oh,
is
it was.
Yeah, this is scheduled to be discussed by the planning board next Tuesday.
Okay, next Tuesday. Mm-hmm. But that, so
you wanted to get to public
planning
board's opinion.
I want to get it to the planning board before we vote on first reading and see what the planning board has to say.
Well, so you
get
would. It wouldn't that. Come. The earliest it could come for first reading would be September 13th.
Okay.
Right.
And by the way, Mr. Chairman, there's one caller on Zoom.
But we have a meeting in October as well, right?
Yes.
So we could get through first and second reading by the end of October. That would be my preference, is if we can get the input of the planning board.
Sure. Yeah. So I was going to say the same thing. I didn't realize this was a dual referral. I like everything I heard. I don't sit on the planning board. We're putting a lot of procedures on them. I'd like to get their opinion. We might have missed something.
Sure.
But it sounds like it's on track. So they're going to hear it next Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
So then we could get this all back for the September meeting, potentially for first reading.
Yeah.
And then we have second reading
in
October.
That was the sequence that was envisioned, is that it would go to the planning board, next Tuesday. They would transmit it with a recommendation, and then we would place it first reading September 13th.
Commissioner Fernandez? When are we meeting in September?
That's going to be my question.
When is the land
September
use?
27th, which is after.
So
after the September 1st reading. But we could we have a discussion here between first and second reading?
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we could vote on it on first reading, come back between first and second reading for a discussion case, you know, we want to make any edits to it with the planning board's input, and then take a revised version to second reading.
We can definitely bring it to land use. We can also do it at that meeting.
We could.
Because, you know, that's what we do between first and second reading anyway. We make modifications. So as your item, I'm sure you'll be focused on it. But I do think, you know, two of us are terming out in November. To dump this on in second reading to a brand new commission isn't fair. So
exactly.
We either delay this whole thing or take care of it before. If we all agree that this is good policy, not very controversial, we've got four people here who aren't always like-minded on this kind of thing, this will pass probably 7-0.
And I'll tell you, and that's why I value this commission's input on this, because we all haven't always been on the same page on these matters. And I think, you know, but we've all lived it already. We've all had to go through the process, through the deliberations of it all. And so I think it would be very unfair to dump it on a new city commission that hasn't gone through that process. I trust that we're all capable of doing this, especially because we'll take a very objective approach to it, because we have pretty much all been kind of like in different positions when it comes to these issues.
Okay. So let's.
So I think we can keep the item here, but also send it back to the commission. And that way, because you'll have the input of planning board, you may want to propose some changes when it goes to first reading, and then we can still talk about it here before second reading.
Exactly.
So we'll keep this on the agenda. We'll send this to first reading for the full commission. It's already on agenda. So if we don't come to an agreement or we don't have time in the September meeting. Right. We already have it in front of us.
The sequence would be planning board, first reading, city commission, back to land use, then second reading at city commission.
Yeah. And maybe we don't even talk about it at land use if it passes, you know, easily at first reading. Good job. Okay.
All right, so I'll show that done by acclamation.
Oh, wait, public. Somebody
on. There's one caller on Zoom. Daniel Serraldo. Daniel, you have 2 minutes.
Good morning, Daniel.
Hi. Good morning, commissioners. Thank you. This is a really interesting discussion. It is very concerning to me that Tallahassee did something that goes against our charter. And I hope the city is going to look into ways to rectify this in the future sessions, since it is the will of our voters. It is in our charter. But given where we're at now, the overall process sounds interesting, especially if it can reduce the time to hear all these items and make things more transparent. Hopefully at the planning board, there will also be a requirement for public comment so we can get stakeholder input in public. One concern I have, though, about this is what will be the criteria for an FAR increase? You know, I don't think anyone up there on the dais or in the city wants to have a new cottage industry of lobbyists coming for spot zoning for this building and that building. You know, will this be once every 10 years, once every year, once every month, or five every month? I think, you know, we should understand what may be precipitated by this. And that's why I've always said that the existing zoning should be the default. There should only be exceptional circumstances for FAR increases. We're a city with a lot on our plate. We don't want to become just all about FAR. That's why we have master plans. Finally, if there's a way to also include a straw ballot to let the voters weigh in, I think that's still legal and it's optional. It'd just be another data point to consider, and I look forward to following this process. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I would like to ask, Tom, would there be a way to incorporate just some of the feedback that we got from Daniel, share some of that feedback with the planning board?
Sure. We can, as part of the presentation, Rogelio's here, as part of the presentation of the planning board next Tuesday, we can certainly provide that to them.
Let me ask Nick. Nick, my understanding was that we even had challenges with straw ballots
under what the state passed?
That's right. The state.
We did discuss this at some point.
We did, and I've gotten this question at the Charter Review Committee, too. And the state law broadly prohibits a referendum on a land development regulation. That would include a straw ballot. So a straw ballot on FAR would be prohibited.
And under the new resiliency code that was adopted, it creates cycles, Tom. Is that correct?
Yeah, it creates quarterly zoning amendment adoptions. And so this year, since the code went into effect in June, you can adopt up to four times a year, which should allow us to get through the legislation we have pending. We were going to bring a discussion item to the commission in September with a draft schedule beginning in 2024 that would set forth the actual quarterly cycle.
And what that would essentially do is that if we start to see that there are, let's say, independent requests for FAR increases and, you know, more targeted, like hotspots for it, and, you know, well, then it helps us understand, well, what's the need in this area and determine, well, should we be considering these as independent applications, or do we need to be looking at a broader policy issue so that we're not benefiting one property at the detriment of another property? You know, do we need to have a bigger policy discussion, which I see it being the advantage to have these cycles, that it's not just randomly, but it's through these periods, which is similar to what Miami-Dade County does when they amend their comprehensive plans, that they have their cycles. And if you miss a cycle, that's it. You got to wait now to the next cycle in order to submit your application. And the cycles for the resiliency code is coming in September, you said?
Yeah, we're going to bring a draft schedule starting in 2024 for the commission to consider and approve or modify.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, colleagues.
So by acclamation, we'll show this being continued to the September 27th meeting, and we will get input from the planning board on what we had discussed today, including the potential for creating exceptions based upon certain thresholds. Yeah.
And Tom, I think the committee is also transmitting a recommendation, though, because so that you can transmit to the planning board, right?
So I think you said it's a dual referral, but
right.
We're also sending it back to the commission, so it'll be there for first reading after the planning board hears it.
Yeah, so the sequence was planning board.
Right.
Then it's going to the city commission in
September 13th.
September. Then it has the opportunity to come back to land use. We want to have a discussion of it here at land use. And then we have a second hearing at commission in October.
The only thing I will say is, you know, we know how we feel about this item. We don't know what planning board's going to say. So
right.
Whatever comes back for the commission for first reading, you know, you're going to have to pay attention to what planning board says, because we may have to revise that language because they may come up with something we didn't think about that's a good idea. So what we might actually vote on in that September meeting might look a little bit different than what we discussed today.
Yeah, so just so I'm clear, we're not making our specific recommendation on this. We're transmitting it to the commission pending input from the planning board, so that because whatever input that we may get, we may want to tweak this.
But in order to have a first reading that we vote on, we'd have to have an ordinance drafted, right?
Yes. So what's on the planning board agenda next week is in the form of an ordinance.
It'll be a discussion item. It'll be an actual ordinance that we vote on in September, mm-hmm. so we could take care of this before the elections. So it'll have to be in a posture that's an ordinance.
Right.
And then the notes would be the planning board comments. We'll accept them, not accept them, into the ordinance and vote on the ordinance.
That's right.
Yeah, I think that they're going to look at an ordinance, I think. The planning
board. Oh, yeah, no.
The planning board's going to look at an ordinance between
today and
Tuesday?
Yeah, you actually had a draft ordinance attached to this.
Oh, okay, this.
But the planning board absolutely got a draft ordinance.
Okay.
Yeah. I just don't want to mislead my colleague that I'm making a recommendation on this, because I'm going to wait until I get the input from the planning board to see where I'm going to be.
That's the impression I've gotten, is that you've discussed this, you're continuing it to September 27th, but you have not yet made a recommendation.
The Land Use Committee is not right now doing a favorable or an unfavorable recommendation. or just letting this move forward to the city commission. Right. And that's fair. I appreciate that input.
Again, I'll tell you, great job, Commissioner Fernandez. Thank you. On this, so. Yeah, I will say one editorial comment that I think is, you know, important. You know, comments are made like, hey, the city's charter and, the voters have spoken. You know, it was 1999, almost 25 years ago, with the downzoning. Okay, so that does not have to be the law of the land forever and ever. Things change. In 1999, when this was passed, there was reasons for it. The city looked very different than it looks today, and they didn't have the urgency of sea level rise and climate change that we're facing today. They did not have the affordability housing crisis that we have today. Now the new regulations around building recertification, that's going to be very onerous on a lot of buildings. Things changing in mass transit, the complexion of our city and demographics. Hey, we have this law and you got to follow it. Like, laws get adapted to changing times. And if you don't, then you get preempted, like we just did. So, you know, it's time that we look at everything, including our city charter, to see, does it currently meet the needs of our ever-evolving community? So I just wanted to add that. We're running out of time. I want to try to take care of a few things. I'd like to hear item number 9, because we have some folks here for that, and I've asked my friends to stick around. But also maybe want to address number 5 if we could do it quickly. Do we think we can address item 5 quickly, or is that going to be a long debate?
I can.
Okay. So item 5, let me call it up. This is a discussion item to amend the city's LDRs to require a 6/7 vote of the city commission prior for adoption of any increase in a property's zoned floor area ratio, FAR, which is the way the city uses to regulate the size of a building.
And I think I previously stated that I don't want to support this because I think it's going to trigger a reaction from Tallahassee. Right now, we have a 5/7 vote in the city. And I think that if we try to react to what the state did, they're just going to go back next year and do a 4/7. They'll just do a simple majority. That's an easy amendment. And then we lose the benefit that we have now of being 5/7. So I don't think it's a good idea to go 6/7 with the state having the option to come back and preempt us again. If they didn't have that option, maybe fine. But then even with 6, as you said, then it gives one person veto.
Yeah. I mean, I personally think if we're adopting Commissioner Fernandez's idea in item 5, we're putting some very, very solid protections for our community and for ourselves. And the 6/7 vote, I'm really reluctant in almost every instance to have a super, super majority on things. And a 6/7 vote, I just think, puts an awful lot of power in potentially a person's hands who will misuse it. And I think it just really makes it very difficult to move forward on good ideas that we all might support, but you have a lone holdout that will really cause a lot of pain and chaos. And also, I think you're inviting Tallahassee to preempt us yet again, and I want to avoid that at all costs.
I agree. I was concerned with all of the preemptions that were done by Tallahassee already. And I wouldn't want to make things worse. I think Commissioner Richardson said that it could trigger something to simple majority instead of 5/7. So that's also concerning. But I would be fine with bringing it to the full commission for discussion and see where the rest of our colleagues are.
I believe the intent of the sponsor is to bring it to the commission for first reading on September 13th. This is scheduled also to be considered by the planning board next Tuesday.
Okay. Commissioner Fernandez, any thoughts on this?
Well, I guess I chimed in on my thoughts about this earlier. There's certain things in the charter, the ones that haven't been preempted, that, you know, we could have a voter referendum. And then when we choose not to do a voter referendum, the alternate path that the charter prescribes is a 6/7 vote of the city commission. I see this kind of similar had we not been preempted. So I think it's just consistent. But I agree with Commissioner Dominguez, perhaps not take an official position of the body at this time, allowing it to go to commission, seeing what the input of the city commission is. My inclination is, to protect the local governance, the local voice as much as possible. Before, the threshold was a majority of the voters. A very expensive process, a process that would cost millions of dollars, and that has been taken away. It's much more streamlined than now. So absence of that is very simple. If a project is really good and merits this and it serves a good purpose towards the economy of our city to get 6 votes, I think it's not easy, but I'm sure it's much easier than convincing 50% of the electorate of the city of Miami Beach. So absent that voter referendum requirement, I think that this is the next best thing to safeguard our community. At the full commission, I think I would be inclined to support it.
And I would just say that I think it might be easier to get a simple majority of 50% plus one vote versus 85%, which is 6/7. Yeah.
Yeah. I would encourage both of you not to take the bait of a select few members of the public that like to make a lot of noise on this, and actually do the prudent thing, which is take what Tallahassee's telling us to do, which is you guys have to vote on this, not the public. And if you do this, we're going to preempt you yet again. All of us are duly elected. We all listen to the public. You have, I think, put forward some really great proposals. And I walked in here probably not thinking I was going to support it, but you articulated well. And I'm like, okay, this serves the public and it serves us because it puts some processes in place. A 6/7 vote is just inviting Tallahassee to overrule us. But also just I've seen the abuse, particularly at least one of our colleagues, when given power, will abuse it, and I just don't want to see that happen. This doesn't make us a better city. This doesn't make for better public policy. This is just sort of taking, red meat for a handful of, advocates that don't want to see anything done in the city to try to sort of curry favor with them that are, they'll turn on you on a dime anyway, so just don't take the bait. Don't support this. We're all
a question.
Big boys and girls. We know what we're doing. We can vote for good projects without taking the power away from ourselves and becoming super inflexible and exacerbating an affordability problem, which is already so out of hand that people are leaving Miami Beach. Our population is going down, not up, because people can't afford to live here anymore.
And the other thing is, we're moving into the silly season, right, the campaign season. And so the candidates, all of them, may want to try to use this as some sort of messaging. So I just think that – I hope that doesn't happen because it would be for the wrong reason.
And let me just ask, what would be helpful to me before this goes to the city commission, one of the things that with the process that we were discussing – we did look at what other jurisdictions do. What does Miami-Dade County, City of Miami, and other jurisdictions do? I would value very much if our staff could look at what are the thresholds of other jurisdictions when they're considering increases of floor area ratio. I think the county commission is a seven vote of the 13-member body. But I'm not sure what other small local governments are requiring as their threshold. And so please, if we could get that information for first reading, I would certainly value that very much.
Okay. Neeson, did you want to say?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Neeson Kazan. I just wanted to add my voice in support of this not moving forward. I think in addition to the potential political consequences outlined by Commissioner Richardson and Commissioner Areola, which could provoke a preemptive action by the state, which could also overwhelm a good piece of legislation like Commissioner Fernandez has just introduced, I want to talk briefly about this legally. There is a reason why the state has said you can't subject FAR to a vote. The FAR, what you can build on your property, is part of your bundle of property rights. Property rights are protected by the United States Constitution, just as the right of to practice the religion you wish or right of free speech. Those cannot be subject to a vote. And in fact, the city attorney's office, a prior city attorney, had received an independent opinion from an eminent land use attorney and litigator, which has never really been aired, a number of years ago, which said that the city's requirement of referendum is violative of the law. And so let's really put it on the table and not have people deceived into thinking that this is something you can do and subject it to a vote. It never was right. It probably, if someone had challenged it, and you can look at the, you can ask the city attorney to dig up that opinion from the outside counsel they hired, probably would have been subject to challenge. No property owner would challenge it, because who wants to be involved in litigating for 3 or 4 years? So I think it's very important that you don't. And the other thing is this. Every other zoning item would be done by the typical 5/7 majority if it's an amendment. But this, only one thing, would be 6/7. I think that singles out, once again, you're treating this right, property right, differently than all others. One other cautionary tale. I think you could look at the city of South Miami, which had a, I think it was unanimous, if I'm not mistaken, requirement. And the paralysis that subjected that city to in terms of any updated modernization of their zoning.
That was the Sunset Place project, yes. If I'm not mistaken. My parents lived there. I grew up there. They can't remember all of the details now, but basically they super majority empowered for redevelopment of that Sunset Place, which is the economic hub of South Miami. The residents overwhelmingly wanted redeveloped, and I think a loan commissioner
could hold it up.
Killed it, and now they regret it. They regret it, but now they're 10 years, into the future, and maybe someone will come and redevelop it and really, save that little community. But
Tom Cruise was there over.
Yeah, that's right. but if you go, I grew up going there. It is a ghost town. It is, and there's homeless now. They didn't used to have homeless. And it's this is an example of giving power to one person.
And if I could just add, Mr. Chairman, the voters in South Miami recently amended the charter to reduce the requirement back to
that's right
to a 4/5.
Yeah, guys. I mean, what's going to happen if it goes? You need 5/7 to pass this, right? So if you guys burn us, it'll be me and Richardson and Gelber. Painted as the bad guys. It won't pass, and you guys get to go to the community saying, we're standing up for property rights, but those three evil guys are getting in the way. Don't burn us. You guys don't like this, and you're just potentially kowtowing to a small group of people that don't want to see anything happen in our city.
What I want to do is I want to see objectively what are the requirements of other cities. And I know now South Miami. South Miami used to have it. They changed it. And maybe it's with the wisdom of having a mayor who was a legislator in Tallahassee and perhaps is, just foreseeing what Tallahassee is doing, and that's former Representative Fernandez. That's now the mayor of the city of South Miami. For me, it's going to be very helpful just to see
objectively what are other cities doing, and go from there.
Yeah, I mean, this is not going to pass, and I'm sure it'll go down in a 4-3 vote like most land use issues. Even though you guys, I think, in your heart agree this is a bad idea, you end up getting pressured into supporting it, knowing that it'll fail. I ask you, please don't do that. It becomes a huge campaign issue. You end up getting people who shouldn't be elected, and then the city suffers for it. Don't make this a campaign issue. This is not good policy. Let's call up item number 9.
So for item number 5, do you want to conclude that with no recommendation, or did you...
I'm perfectly happy calling a vote. You know, you're not a voter on this. I mean, we could pass it. You're against it. I'm against it.
I'd like for it to go to the commission for further discussion.
So you're a no.
Well, can you do a motion with
unfavorable? Yeah.
Well, or with no recommendation, just transmit it without recommendation.
I prefer to send it unfavorable. I mean,
I'm not going to support it, so I'll move it unfavorable, or we can send it back without a recommendation, but I can't send it back with a recommendation because I don't support that.
I would send it back unfavorable.
All right, so you want me to show it unfavorable 2-1? Okay.
Thanks. So I'm going to call up item number 9, and this, Commissioner Friends, if you have time, just to hear it, because this is a test case for everything we just did for the past hour and a half.
Okay.
I sponsored this, and I really not leaning one way or another at all. The only reason I supported this to bring it to us was it to use it as a test case for this public policy of FAR increase requests. And because of everything you did, Commissioner Fernandez, on item 5, you've at least given me a pathway to consider these kinds of requests. This request from a property owner, not technically in the Sunset Harbor neighborhood, just across the street, to ask for, among other things, an FAR increase. And I've asked my friends, Sarah Marilyn, to stay here, because I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. I don't know if you've been briefed on this issue. This is Dom's. You haven't? Okay, so then you're going to hear it for the first time. Mm-hmm. I don't know a lot about it either, other than it was a request, and I said, okay, let's use this as a test, because if you want to be the first to go in the community to ask for additional FAR, let's get the ball rolling to see what a process would look like for considering this kind of thing. This is a property just outside of the Sunset Harbor neighborhood, bordered by Dade Boulevard and Alton Road. You might know it as the Chase Bank Building. Well-situated property, brutalist-style architecture, I would say, in that building. And the current building owner has some ideas they want for us to consider for redevelopment, which would include a request for FAR increase. Michael, did I serve that up?
That's correct.
Okay.
You ready, him? All right. So,
and we don't have to opine today, but I think just hear it out and... Go ahead.
Okay. I have to be somewhere at 12:30.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I will say this, because other people have approached me about individual applications for FAR increases that they've, you know, verbally expressed to me. And I've been very consistent in what I've been telling everyone. I first want to see us adopt a process so that everyone follows that same fair process. And when, if this goes to the planning board, you know, the planning board can consider it without knowing, you know, does Commissioner Fernandez or does Commissioner Dominguez or anyone else support this or not. And so I don't want for my comments to then later on influence, you know, what should be a completely objective, you know, review of the planning board. So that's been what I've been sharing with other individuals.
Yeah, my guess is before we consider anything, we will have to have adopted your item, put a process in place.
I think it's a
fair
thing.
Any applicant will have to go through.
I think it's a fair thing, because if not, different people are going to be going through different processes, and that wouldn't be an even playing field.
Okay. Yeah, so potentially you'd have to wait, Mr. Larkin, 90 mm-hmm. days, 120 days before actually getting the ball rolling, but if you want to... start educating the public and us, you know, you want to be the test case.
Yeah.
Go for it.
I think that's a great position to be in. No problem. You have to step out. All right. And enjoy the rest of your day.
So you're the guinea pig.
That's fine. Let's go for it.
And you've got some amazing community activists here who are going to be seeing this for the first time. So
yeah, I'm excited that they're here in support. Thank you, guys.
No, they're not. I don't think they're here. I thought you had been briefed. But, okay.
But don't worry, ladies. It's only 200 feet high. It's fine. I'm teasing, of course.
Okay, so good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Richardson, Commissioner Dominguez, Michael Larkin, 200 South Biscayne Boulevard, here representing Dom Capanolo, the owner of 1801 Alton Road. You all know him as the prior owner of Lucali, best pizza shop in town. He's a well-known Sunset Harbor resident. He's been active there for a number of years, and he's owned this property for a number of years. The difficulty with this property is that it's zoned CD1, and it's a gateway property. And CD1 was perhaps appropriate at a time in the history of Miami Beach where we welcome suburban-style development with one-story commercial buildings surrounded by an asphalt sea parking lot. We don't welcome that anymore. We want change. We want quality mixed-use buildings. But that comes with a necessary increase in the maximum zoned FAR from 1.0. We're asking for a 3.0. And this project, and let's just go through, Emily, some of that so everyone knows. Next slide. So it's at the northeast corner of Jade Boulevard and Alton Road. It's, the boundaries of it are outlined in yellow. Next slide. As you all know, it's a significant intersection. It's a high-traffic area. The property is irregularly shaped. Even has a very narrow driveway between the Walgreens and Publix that is part of this property. And the access to it is a little bit hazardous right now. So it all could be changed and improved. Next slide. This is an aerial looking to the northeast. Our property is bounded in red. Next slide. This is what it looks like now. Next slide. Again, next slide. Next slide. So this is the overlay goals here. We're encouraging a quality project with a desired mix of uses. Here we're doing residential and commercial. And as Commissioner Areola pointed out, and the U.S. Census just released, that our population is shrinking. And it's, we have to be a viable city. Well, we can't be a viable city unless we have a thriving, growing population base. You know, it's a sad thing, but our population is shrinking a great deal every year and for a variety of reasons. So here we're doing commercial on the ground floor, be a mix of restaurant and retail uses. And then we're going to have some really nice residential units above. The FAR, as I said, we're asking for 3.0 to apply this entire triangle, which would also encompass the Walgreens and the Publix. We think it's fair to elevate everybody in this triangle. Right now, for this particular project, it's 1.0, and at 1.0, you can have an FAR of 46,820 square feet. With a 3.0, the FAR could go up to 140,460 square feet. In deference to what you all had said, we're already working with the traffic engineer and other consultants. We realize that it's an important thing to understand the impact upon infrastructure, so we're going to do that. And whatever pace you all want to go, we would love to go to planning board in September. If that's not going to be an option, then we'll keep on working and refining our case to be consistent with the legislation that you all passed today, sponsored by Commissioner Fernandez. What I'd like to do, Mr. Chairman, we have some time, just a few more slides. I want Kobe Karp just to go over his design for the project. So go ahead, Kobe.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon. This is Kobe Karp. Thank you very much. I'll be brief. I'll just show the image. So what we are looking at is basically have a subterranean parking. Next image, please. And on this specific site, we have an opportunity to make the site porous. Instead of driving around it, we have an opportunity to...
Sorry, Kobe, I don't like interrupting, but you said subterranean parking?
Yes, right now. That's what we're looking at.
Which is amazing. Is that affordable? Is that doable?
It is in this location because it rises up a little bit, and so we are thinking of doing that on this site, yes.
Would that parking be included in the FAR?
No.
No.
And what happens is it allows us also, because of this unique site, is if you go to the next image, because we share the block with Publix, we share the block with Walgreens, and so we're looking at making it a porous site where we can have connectivity, both vehicular and pedestrian, from Alton to Dade Boulevard, to 19th Street, so that people can actually walk through the site and have accessibility. You can see on the corner, obviously, we have the retail or the food and beverage. We tucked in our loading. We tucked in our residential entry. Next image, please. And then we have the residences above. We do have a unique site that has multiple faces to it, so what we did is we opened it up in all directions. If you go to the next image, please. And then we have a rooftop for the residences. And in essence, if you go to the next image, that's the section, what it looks like with the commercial retail that then is more welcoming, if you will, on that corner. And if you go to the next image, this is an image looking, so the waterways to the right, Alton Road to the south, Sunset Harbor is to the left, Michael's is on the left. That would be that image, next image. And then this would be the residence.
How tall is that building?
We're looking at a total of 75 feet. And so we're surrounded by buildings on Alton Road and the surrounding area at 2.0 or so. And so what we're looking at is to have the residences with their amenity area on top.
So, even with 3.0, which is, hey, that's triple, you're only at 75 feet. I was worried it was going to be taller than that.
No, 75 feet, yeah. And then what we have is we have an opportunity for the interior gardens, you know, and really incorporate something into the community that people who walk by and drive by every day there. It's kind of like Palau, right? Palau has an amenity area, brought the residences to the community where before it was a dry cleaners and a hardware store, right? And so next image, please. That's it. Thank you.
The property is a really irregular shape, isn't it, with that finger that kind of goes out. Was it always that, or was that somehow split somehow? Or
I think it had to be split. It would not have been platted like that.
Yeah, it's very odd.
That's unusual.
But now in the design, you would use that as a driveway to come in?
Correct, yeah. It's used as a driveway now. And I don't know, I think that you all should embrace a project like this. But in deference to your desire that Commissioner Fernandez's legislation be adopted, I think second reading, if it stays on its current schedule, is October. So one direction could be to have this particular ordinance, like it would be an overlay zone, be considered by the planning board in November.
I'm not opposed to having them look at it. But what will we do? We would wait until we get the second reading back from this other one. If it passes, then
I think we could refer
pending.
Yeah, my two cents on this would be, like I said, you know, you're a test case guinea pig. I don't know how I feel about it. My advice to you would be to, you know, you heard everything today. If we're going to adopt Commissioner Fernandez's ordinance, that'll be first reading September, second reading October. My guess is it'll pass in substantially the format that it was laid out. However we might opine on your issue today, start working on it as if that's the new law. So massing studies, traffic impact, economic impact, community outreach, all of the – just start getting all of that done because you're going to have to do it anyway. Right. So you're not losing the time in which you would formally hear it, which would probably be in November.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Fernandez's proposal, this actually would be a private application, so the commission would not refer it. So Mr. Larkin would actually make application to the planning board, and he could do so. He could start that process for the November planning board meeting.
Right. So his application would go in November.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. So that's what I was, that's what I was going to say is. And
sure.
So he really did a good job on this. Because if I was an applicant and I had to come to get a 5-7 vote, go through that whole rigmarole, you're better off many times just going right to the planning board, getting the ball rolling. And so by the time it comes to the full commission, you've already got your public input and your outreach and all of that. And if you have the public support, you typically get the commission support. Without having to get our support, then a referral to planning board and going through that mental torture.
having said that, Mr. Mooney, is there a way to get to even earlier planning board hearing in October?
Yeah, I would advise you don't do that. Don't do something that's going to compromise. Wait a month or two.
The problem with applying for – and November might be tricky too, but at least we'll have had some good indication from the commission at first reading as to what the process will be. The problem with October is that we really won't have the process in place by the time you need to get the application with all the exhibits in. November would be better because you'd be submitting everything before adoption in October, but at least it would be likely after first reading, and you'd have a much better idea as to what the process would be and what you will need to submit.
Okay.
And you're going to have a new commission anyway, so it doesn't matter what, at least Commissioner Richardson and I say, we won't vote on this. Mm-hmm. So you might as well get all your ducks in a row, and you'll bring this to a brand new commission. And if you do a good job of public outreach and it's a good project that merits the FAR increase, my guess is you'll get that support.
My supporters have some questions.
Come up real quick. Yeah. I mean, look, it's a unique property because you really only have commercial next to you. You have a Walgreens and Publix. And they're not going to object to residential. And so it's really the Sunset Harbor neighborhood if you can get some momentum going.
Residential condos or residential short-term rental?
Condos.
The 75 feet.
Speaking to the mic, Sarah.
75 feet, does it include the flood elevation?
Yeah, that's very important.
Because it's not really 75 feet then.
Is it total?
Right. Yeah, building could be, I mean, I am clear about building here.
This is why you need to get working on this, Michael. Yeah, you have to sit down with these ladies in the community hear their
beautiful
concerns.
I mean, it's really nice. We like that.
75, but then you put the floor elevation and the freeways and it becomes
it's probably closer to
90.
200 feet.
No, it's not 200 feet.
No, I'm serious because that's what happened with the building right.
All right, well, hey, guys, we're not going to do anything today.
But just
please meet.
We'll meet. But it's a nice looking, for our area, would actually look really nice right there.
I don't want to prejudice anything, that's what I'm saying.
No, it's really nice. We like the design better than what it is right now.
And I just have some quick comments on it. I'm supportive of the project. I think it would be good for that particular corner. Some things that came to mind to me when reading about it was to make sure that there were no short-term rentals. Right. If possible, I'd love to see some sort of setback so it's not an imposing concrete corridor in that corner. And I'd love shade trees when you're walking on the sidewalk and have some sort of protection and include some of those
elements.
Well, after
this building, Michael's needs an upgrade. You know what I'm saying?
Because
compared to this building now across, and Michael is such a structure that
we'll talk offline. What happened to Michael's? It got sold, I think, right?
I know, but I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, I heard if someone was going to make it a family office prop. Is that right?
I think it's correct.
Oh, that'll be cool.
Okay. All right.
Look, I mean, this is a good example, right? So it's a tripling of FAR. Oh, my gosh. It sounds like a pretty good project. It's not going to bother anybody.
But how big, when it's triple the FAR, how big would it get?
Well, that's what he said, 75 feet tall.
Oh, yeah, 75 feet tall. That's not bad because you know what?
It's compatible with the neighborhood.
Arcadia is 99.
It's compatible with the neighborhood.
And Elton Road in 1920 is 87. I mean, believe me, I know all the numbers. So,
and how many units are you thinking this will bring?
40.
40. Yeah.
Two bedroom, one bedrooms.
Two bedrooms.
And if they do, workforce housing, it could be 200 feet.
You keep saying that.
I've always said that height.
Pretty.
It's not a four-letter word. It just depends. Okay. Yeah. You know, I've been supportive of height. But it just depends.
It depends, yeah.
No, but that's fine. I think it's a beautiful project.
I mean, this is where, you know, the request for FAR, there has to be good public input, public benefit. Commissioner Dominguez said some things that I also agree with in terms of shade and stuff like that. But, I will want to see some really significant public benefit to do something special. Because, the developer will get money that the city doesn't have, so
I agree.
Do something nice.
Those are all reasonable requests. Thanks, everybody, for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Do you want to show this discussed and concluded?
Discussed and concluded, yes. Discussed and concluded, a new commissioner will bring this back in November, I guess. All right, we have a hard stop now at 12:30. Thanks for staying. All right, great meeting, guys. Sorry we didn't get to everything. We'll take this up at our next meeting.